Blog Talk Radio.
The Moxie Fix.
Give me a good clean fight, good luck to most of you.
The Boxing Fix. For the boxing addicts who are itching for their fix, we welcome The Boxing Fix. Every Sunday night at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. Join us here at The Boxing Fix.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Boxing Fix. I'm fellow boxing addict and your host, Josh McDaniel. I'm in a good mood, as you see, because of such great boxing went on. I am joined by my co-host coming off of a two-week, vacation. No, I'm just kidding. None other than the PR superstar, Emily Pondolakis. Emily, are you there? I guess she might not be on yet. Well, while I wait for her to get on and everything, we had a great, fun weekend in boxing, all the way from over across the pond to boxing being back in Brooklyn, Triple B, boxing back in Brooklyn. That was the theme, basically, and it was a great show, that showcase they put on, Golden Boy over there. Some fun fights, from great storylines to just great action. You know, you got Danny Jacobs beating cancer and coming back from Kid Chocolate and Hassan Nadam putting on a hell of a performance for the crowd. And then you got to see what may be my future Halloween costume, Juan Pablo Knows Eye. That eye was vicious looking, and him and Malignaggi put on a pretty great, interesting fight, too, going toe-to-toe. And then you have the main event from the drama that unfolded before the fight happened a couple of days before, with the positive testing of Eric Morales to seeing Al Terrible go out on his shield. I mean, man, it was a great great night of boxing. Just waiting for Emily to join us. But, man, it was just a great weekend and a lot of talk about today. We also have a couple of special guests on today. We got Ray Bauchon coming on a little bit later on the show. He's going to be discussing his upcoming fight, defending his newly received belt after beating Hank Lundy on Friday Night Fights. He will be back in action in December, so can't wait to see that. And then we also have Yusef Mack later on. Now, Emily, are you back on?
I am. I'm here. Sorry about that.
Oh, there you go. Did you hear my intro to you? You missed it.
I missed it. I'm sorry. I'm having some technical difficulties.
Let me rewind back because I didn't say it for nothing, you know. So let me welcome on my co-host coming back from a two-week vacation. None other than the PGR superstar, Emily Pondolakis. There you go. There's your intro. What's going on, Emily?
Nothing. I just want to point out that I was serving food at the home one of those weeks, and that's not vacation. So
vacation from the show.
Yes, I had a vacation from the show.
If everyone who's listening out there, if you hear Emily kind of sound kind of like she's mad at me, she is mad at me. She has some kind of anger towards me, but it's okay. So what did you think about these weekends? Fight? I think it was a great showing. The whole week, I mean, from across the pond to boxing in Brooklyn, I mean, it was a good showing. What do you think about it?
Yeah, you're rude. I think you're rude. No, I'm just playing. you know what? It was a good weekend of boxing, actually. I mean, I wish, you know, we could have one just nice controversy-free weekend, but, you know, the fights themselves, there was very limited controversy. I don't know if some people took issue with the Pauly decision, but, you know, with Morales and his drug test problems, I mean, that I question whether or not he should have been allowed to fight, but, you know, I'm interested to see the post-fight results. But other than that, yeah, it was a good weekend.
Definitely. And we're going to get more in depth about the whole weekend's fights later on. We'll talk about the controversy a little bit and just the other great fights that went on. But before then, you know what we got to do. We're going to go and do what we call here the boxing blitz, quick result recap of this past weekend's fights that went on. So over on Friday the 19th at the Kissimmee Civic Center in Florida, none other than Orlando Cruz, who just recently came out to the public about his sexual preference, defeated Jorge Pazos by unanimous decision. Quite an easy fight for Orlando Cruz. He goes on and continues to have the WBO Latino featherweight title. Also on that card in the light welterweight division, Vicente Mosquera defeated Daniel Ataa. He retired him in the fifth round. Jonathan Gonzalez in the flyweight division defeated Danny Flores by sixth-round TKO. Over at the Doubletree Hotel also on Friday, that was in Ontario, California, Ricky Duenas suffered a loss against Steve Claggett. He was basically quit on the stool. The fight was stopped in the fourth round. It was a scheduled eight-rounder. In the super bantamweight division, Richard Contreras lost to Sean Nichols by a majority decision in the sixth-rounder. Juan Reyes defeated Jose Angel Cota, by unanimous decision. That was in the super bantamweight division. In the lightweight division, Alejandro Luna defeated Adolfo Landeros by a unanimous decision. In the super featherweight division, in the females, Lissette Medal defeated Cynthia Munoz in a six-rounder by decision as well. That was unanimous. And then we go on to the big boys. Now, Matt, I can't pronounce his last name, but I'm going to try it. Mikhailov fought to a draw, majority draw, against Avery Gibson. And the guy that we had on the show last week, prospect from the L.A. Matadors, going in his fourth fight, it was his first fight fighting under the banner of Thompson Boxing. Javier Torres continues his unbeaten streak, moves to 4-0 now by knocking out in the first round Gary Cobia. That was a great fight for Javier, and it get some attention, so that was going on. Now, we're going to fast forward to Saturday now, October 20th. We'll go right to it. The Barclays Center, the first boxing match back in Brooklyn since forever. Danny Garcia knocked out Alto Rible, Eric Morales in the fourth round. That was for the WBA Super World Light Welterweight title and the WBC Light Welterweight title as well. Paulie Malignaggi, Mr. TK himself, the Magic Man, defeated Pablo Cesar Cano in a very, very entertaining back-and-forth battle, I thought, for the WBA World Welterweight title. That was a split decision, very close fight. We'll talk about that later. I thought one of the judges had it completely wrong, where one of the judges had the score of 118 to 109 in favor of Cano. I mean, Cano put up a great fight, and it could have gone either way, but 118-109 was absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. On to probably what the lackluster of the fight of the night in the welterweight division, Devin Alexander of St. Louis, defeated Randall Bailey by unanimous decision. Bailey continued looking for one punch the whole night. Again, we'll get in that a little bit later on. That was for the IBF welterweight title. And in what probably was one of the best stories of the night. Before I get to that, I missed one. In the middleweight division, in what could have been the fight of the night, could be the fight of the night in most people's eyes, Peter Quillin fought to a unanimous decision against Hassan Nazem for the WBO middleweight title. That's Peter's first belt, first American to be to hold the middleweight title since Pavlik, as many of them kept on saying the whole night. Great fight. We're going to get real in-depth in that. I thought it was my favorite fight of the night, definitely. Real quick, Emily, what did you think of that fight? Do you think that was the fight of the night?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it was certainly the most entertaining fight of the night. I mean, you had, Kid Chocolate has this guy who's like a yo-yo, just wouldn't stop coming up and down. I was like, you got to hand it to that guy for continuing to get up.
Well, I think that was the best thing about that fight. It was they both gained fans. Like, Peter definitely gained more fans, and he won a title, And Hassan, who many people haven't seen, at least U.S. American people haven't seen, got to witness a guy with incredible testicle fortitude, I guess, to keep getting up. Like, that guy, man, was taking some shots. He kept going up. He went down six times, and he didn't get stopped. So
it's not like he was going down and getting up and struggling. When he got up, he, gave Hassan a fight.
Right. And I think that fight definitely showed that having a really solid jab can help you out in many, many ways to even to use as a defense mechanism, which he used when he was hurt. So that big shout out to his spawn. I heard there was some drama in the post-fight press after the press conference after the fight between his people and Richard Schaefer, from what I was reading on Twitter from the people who were there. But very interesting. We'll get into that later. What I was saying, the story of the night, the feel-good story, and I know you felt happy about this, super middleweight division, Daniel Jacobs returning from the beating cancer, defeated by in the first round knockout against Josh Lutheran. Lutheran, you know, I mean, he was 13-1. He's been knocked out before, but, you know, Daniel Jacobs went in there to finish him off, and great story for Daniel. He also, you know, supported the whole breast cancer thing that's going on. He had a little pink gloves on, or pink thumbs of the gloves, if I'm not mistaken. But shout out to Daniel Jacobs. Great job for him. In the welterweight division, Luis Collazo returning to the ring back in Brooklyn, you know, defeated Steve Upshur by a unanimous decision in the 8-rounder. That was a pretty good fight for Luis. We'll see, wonder what he has going on for him. Another prospect everyone has his eye out. Some people have seen him on Showbox and other on other channels for fights. Eddie Gomez defeated Saul Benitez by second round KO with a vicious left hook. Hell of a fight for Gomez. Again, you know, repping Brooklyn. Now, Brooklyn was definitely in the house over at the Barclays Center. It was great to see all that going on. And also on that card, to round it off, Demetrius Alita defeated Grandon Hoskin by unanimous decision in a workman-like type fight for Salida. That great card there over on Showtime. Now, also on Saturday, over at Motorport Arena in Sheffield, Yorkshire, United Kingdom, for all the UK listeners out there, Cal Brook defeated Hector Saldivia by a third-round TKO. It was all Cal Brook kind of fight, pretty much. Cal Brook looked great. He looked in shape, coming off of another great fight that he had earlier in the year against Carson Jones. Curious to see where Cal Brook goes from here. He stopped Hector with a vicious jab, believe it or not. Partially because Hector ran into it too, so it was even more power to it. But Cal Brook continues to make his name in that welterweight division and trying to get some credibility in there. Also on that card in the bantamweight division, Jamie McDonald defeated Darwin Zamora retired him out in the 8th round. That was another big fight for Jamie. I think Jamie is looking for some bigger and better things coming up. Super middleweight division, which was I got to boast and brag real quick. I called this to Emily. I told her Kenny Anderson stopped Robin Reed TKO in the 5th round. That was for the vacant BBB of C, British super middleweight title. Robin Reed has had a pretty good career. I think time's up for him, old man. But real quick, Emily, so I can boast and brag, what was going through your mind when you're like, damn, Josh called it right on the spot?
Well, you did, you know, say, you know, this is exactly what I said was going to happen, that he would gas out in 3 to 5 rounds, and that's what happened. And, you know, honestly, I'd really like to see that guy in his prime. I said this on Twitter. I want to go look at some of his videos because I think technically he was the better fighter, you know, just from purely technical standpoint, you know, skills-wise. Obviously, you know, when you get older, your speed deteriorates and that kind of thing. You know, probably it's time for him to hang it up again. I think he retired already for 5 years before. But you know, I enjoyed the fight. Anderson obviously brought it. Anderson struck me as a little more messy fighter. But, yeah, I mean, you definitely said that Robin Reed was going to gas out in the 5th. I think for fantasy boxing, I think I picked it in the 7th, so.
Well,
again,
you should have listened to your
trainer. And there are people who are giving Robin Reed the chance to win. Go ahead.
I definitely think you should start listening to your trainer more when it comes to fantasy boxing, but that's neither here or there. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Also on that card in light welterweight division, Tyrone Nurse defeated Santos Medrano in the 8-rounder. Also, Khalid Yafai, which I know you told me to make sure I watched this fight, and I did, just dominated. It's Scott Gladwin. This fight was stopped in the 2nd round of the scheduled 6-rounder. I want to talk a little bit more about this, maybe a little, I mean, not too much, but I got some stuff to say, and I'll just put it out there real quick. Emily, I'm glad you told me to watch this. I think Khalid, although it was only his 4th fight, I think he's he's someone to keep an eye out. I think he's a prospect that everyone should watch out for. His body shots are vicious.
They are. For his size, he hits very hard. He's fast. He's so accurate. Like, everything he tried to land, he landed, and he landed it hard. And I really enjoyed watching him. Like, I'm excited to watch him again. I hate to say it. He reminds me of Junior a little bit. Like, just in the accuracy and strength of his punches.
Wow, okay. if anyone is going to get to see that fight, you guys can make sure you go on Sweet Boxing website. We'll probably have him on later. I'll try to say the website without butchering it right now. I think it's sweetboxingvideos.wordpress.com. That fight's on there. You can catch it. I mean, this guy's someone to watch out for. Also, in the light welterweight division, Scott Cardo defeated Kareem Aliche via sixth round there by decision. Also, heavyweight division, David Howe defeated Paul Morris in the four-rounder as well. Excuse me. Also on Saturday, over in Caguas, Puerto Rico, at Taliso Roger El Mendoza, bantamweight division, Jonathan Vidal, moving his record to 17-0, defeated Josan Figueroa by knockout. He defeated him in the third round via KO. And then over in the middleweight division, Janiel Rivera defeated Omar Soto in the first round KO, and that was for the vacant WBC the car box title. Jeez, title means we're killing. In the bantamweight division, Starling Cordero defeated Eduardo Melendez. That was a unanimous decision in the sixth rounder. Pedro Vicente moved his young record to 3-0, defeating Juan Manuel Pilot by split decision in a scheduled four-rounder. Robert Figueroa and Jose Valle, the fought to a draw, and Charlie Clemente defeated Armando Adorno by second-round PKO, and round that card off, Kevin Neves defeated Osvaldo Vasquez in his debut by third-round KO. In the Philippines, Metro Manila, Philippines, veteran Ray Bautista defeated Daniel Ruiz by split decision, and AJ Bunnell suffered a loss against, this is going to be hard to say, Peng Luang Sor Singyu by TKO ninth round. That was for the vacant WBO bantamweight title as well. Over in Mexicali, Baja California, Jorge Paez Jr., veteran, defeated Charlie Jose Navarro by a majority decision in the scheduled 10-rounder. That was for the vacant WBC silver welterweight title. Light welterweight, Humberto Mauro Gutierrez lost to Armando Robles by a majority decision. Luis Antonio Arceo defeated Alberto Borges by seventh-round TKO in the scheduled 8-rounder. In Chihuahua, Mexico, Mario Alberto Lozano defeated Ramon Alvarez by unanimous decision for the WBC, again, FECOM box welterweight title. And to round off the night over there, actually, this was in Argentina. Omar Narváez, who we all remember from fighting in a horrible performance against Nonito Donaire, where he did not even want to throw a punch, defeated Johnny Garcia by 11th round KO for the WBO super flyweight title. Real quick, Emily, isn't it funny to see a guy like Omar Narváez who suffered his first loss against Nonito and basically put a lackluster performance against him, didn't want to fight with him, didn't want to do anything, ends up KOing his opponent?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a way to make a comeback. And who did he fight?
Well, he fought Johnny Garcia, but he fought Nodio, I think it was earlier in the year, and he didn't want to fight him. Like, he did not throw any punches. I don't know if you can recall that fight, but, I mean, he just did not. It was horrible. Nonito was getting frustrated. He couldn't, you know, and it was just horrible.
Well, sometimes it takes, you know, a performance like that on a big stage like that to, you know, make a change.
True. Also on that card in the middleweight division, Sergio Sanders defeated Billy Godoy by split decision. Gonzalez Alcoba defeated Miguel Angel Alcoba, first-round KO. And Sergio Javier Escobar defeated Raul Tantino by unanimous decision in the sixth rounder, and that's all for your boxing blitz. Those are a lot of fights that some people did not get to catch, and make sure you guys go catch that if you didn't. There's some good fights out there. Real quick, before we get into what we're going to do, let me just tell everyone, everyone listening, make sure you call in 347-215-7598. You want to talk boxing, anything boxing, what happened this weekend, to what's coming up, whatever you want to do, give us a call, go ahead. And don't forget to catch all the other shows that Leaving the Ring Radio presents. We got on Mondays, Noche de Boxeo, 5 Pacific, 8 East. And that's for all your Spanish speakers out there. On Thursday, we have Leaving the Ring Radio with your host, Dave Duenas, and the Dark Cloud Gabriel Montoya. They are on 3 hours of boxing talk on Thursdays, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And also, those shows are produced by none other than the guy who produces our show and does a hell of a job. And joined me last week, too, David Chen. He is the man behind the machine. And don't forget to get your Undisputed Fight magazine, undisputedfightmag.com. If you're a boxing addict and you don't got it, you got a problem. The rehab is doing too good for you. So make sure you guys check that out. But on that note, Emily, let's get into to Saturday's event. Let's get into what went down in Brooklyn. And I want to start it off. Usually I start off with the, you know, the main event so we can work our way to what we usually focus on, the undercards. But I want to start it off right here with the feel-good story. Daniel Jacobs has come back, first fight from defeating cancer, man. I mean, I think they said he weighed over 200 pounds at one point and had and dropped all the weight just for this fight or to make it to even be able to fight. And put on a hell of a performance, looked good. I mean, looked good from what we could tell in a one-round fight and knocked out his opponent. I mean, pretty vicious knockout if you look like his arm was stiff and everything. Man, what? I know this touched you a lot. What did you think? What do you think about this story?
I mean, obviously, to come back from cancer, they said on the broadcast that 17 months ago, I hope I don't get all choked up talking about this. They told him on the broadcast that 17 months ago he was told that he'd never box again. And then, there he was. So that made me really emotional. And, you know, he obviously had a great performance. That guy's head hit the canvas so hard. I was concerned about him. And Daniel Jacobs actually, you know, could hear him asking Richard Schaefer, hey, is he all right?
Definitely it was a great story, especially for me. It hit at home recently because if anyone who follows me on Twitter or anything, my grandfather just had successful surgery on something that was cancer. Like they had to take out something on his lung that was ended up being cancerous. Luckily, it didn't spread. He's recovering as we speak. But I mean, you know, something like that, you know, that just hit recently to home. To see a guy like Daniel Jacobs come back and defeating cancer and all that, I mean, that's a hell of a story. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say almost everybody who listens to the show, who we talk to, who likes boxing, who loves boxing, has dealt with some kind of cancer in their family or a friend. I mean, it's common. I mean, you know, so I think it was a great story. And right on time. I mean, this. Am I correct? This is still Cancer Awareness Month or Breast Cancer Awareness Month, correct?
Yeah, October is. And that was something I was going to say, is that he actually, you know, he's not just wearing these things, you know, not just to show support. I mean, he actually had this personal experience. And I mean, it is obviously a great story. I wouldn't have wanted to be the guy going in to fight him. I mean, they were in there to do a job, but.
Well, since you said that, let's talk about this real quick. I noticed this before the fight. Like you said, I wouldn't want to be the guy going in this fight because, A, you know that the guy who's making the comeback is hungry and wants to kill you pretty much. You know, make a statement. And, B, the odds are against you from the beginning. And then let's just say he would have beaten Danny Jacobs. He becomes the most hated man in the world.
Yeah,
exactly. Literally, like, you know, who's gonna like this guy ever if he was to beat Danny?
Yeah.
But you know, one thing I noticed, so he looked afraid. Not Danny. Josh looked very afraid in the corner. He looked like, damn, I bit off a little bit more than I could chew. I mean, Danny is no pushover anyways. His only loss was a vicious knockout loss to Dmitry Pirog. But, you know, it was a great performance. Now, here's the thing. This is what I was going to ask you. It's a pretty easy question. Danny Jacobs, you know, how long did the fight last? Like a little over a minute or so?
Yeah.
Dude, we don't know much about Danny now. Like, can he go the scheduled 8 rounds in that case? You know, his stamina, everything, you know, we're not quite sure. Do you think that it's in his best interest to just continue fighting C-level, D-level type fighters on his comeback? Or do you think he should just maybe one or two more of them and move up to getting back to where he once was in that division?
I think, you know, there's got to be some kind of ramp-up period because he has been out for so long. But no more than any other fighter. That, you know, a lot of fighters retire and come back. Some stay out of the sport longer than Evander Holyfield did this time around. But he's, you know, I would say there has to be a short ramp-up period. But I don't see why, if he's training and he feels physically ready to fight, why he can't, you know, be at the level he was before.
Yeah, definitely, and I hope he does. I hope his comeback goes full force. Like, he becomes back to being a guy that everyone must pay attention to in that division, because he once was until he ran into the right hand of Dmitry Pirog. And I know he probably wants to get that back as much as, you know, anyone else would after suffering their first loss by knockout, which was very vicious. Let me tell you, but he is a talented young kid, and I wish him all the best. I'm still lost for words just to see a guy come back. I mean, it's one of those made-for-TV type stories, you know. It's a great story to hear. And shout-out to Daniel Jacobs, who drew it in front of his hometown of Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, to open up the Barclays Center at that. That had to be added emotions going through him with all the family and friends that were in attendance for that fight.
Absolutely.
But to move on to the next fight, Luis Collazo. And then, you know, as you see, Brooklyn or Golden Boy, I should say, they set up this whole card, obviously, because it's in Brooklyn, they're going to have a bunch of Brooklyn fighters. And they put on the card Luis Collazo, who everyone, I think, a lot of people are fans of. He's fun to watch fighter, and he hasn't fought in a while. Fighting in Brooklyn, hometown. I mean, I know a lot of people in Brooklyn through Twitter who are boxing addicts out there that love Collazo. You know, they go to his training, everything, and they were on full force again that night. I saw a lot of pictures, great pictures out there. What do you think of Collazo's comeback?
It's good. You know, I like the guy. I'm Facebook friends with Upshur, so I was kind of rooting for him. And I have zero internet connectivity at the moment. When was the last time Collazo fought? Has he fought since he fought Cintron? That was a really amazing fight, if I remember correctly.
Well, one thing with Collazo is he puts on house performances no matter what, you know. But definitely, I'm pulling it up right now just to make sure for you, because I'm curious too. Upshur is another guy who basically had the odds stacked against him because it was like, you know, Collazo's comeback fight and everything. And in his hometown, you know, Brooklyn, you know. But, Collazo fought in 2011 in October as well. It was more than a year since he fought. He fought against Freddie Hernandez. It was a good performance.
Is he a Golden Boy fighter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he won by, you know, the unanimous decision. All judges, well, not all judges, but they had the scores of 79, 73, 77, 75, and 80, 72 in basically a shutout. Was an 8-rounder. Excuse me. But do you think he's an old – I shouldn't use that word too loosely. He's a 31-year-old veteran, with a record of 32-5. He once fought guys like, you know, Andre Berto. You know, he's fought Shane Mosley, Ricky Hatton. Do you think he can climb to the top of this division? Not, I wouldn't say to the top, but to a nice title fight in this welterweight division? Or do you think he's a filler now, you know, just a tester?
I don't see why not. You know, there's the welterweight division back when he did fight Cintron was packed. It had Chad Margarito, you had Cotto, you had Pacquiao, you had all those guys in the welterweight division. They've all mostly moved on, moved up. And I don't, the division is not very packed anymore the way it was. I see it as a little bit more open, you know, for those types of things. I mean, he's going to have to fight a couple of, you know, fights to kind of prove himself, I think, you know, a little higher level, let's say. I don't know. I'd have to think about it, but I don't see why not. What do you think about it?
I think it's perfect for Barclay. Put it this way. If they continue to do fight that at the Barclay Center and represent Brooklyn, he's going to be that guy that Golden Boy turns to. Because I don't know if you knew this, but the Barclay Center is basically all the fights there are going to be Golden Boy promotions. They have a contract with them. So I mean the Klitschko's approached the Barclay Center and wanted to do a big fight there, but they wanted to do the Klitschko fight there, but the problem was the Klitschko's would have to be in co-promotion with Golden Boy, and the Klitschko's didn't want none of that. So that Barclay Center is basically going to be a Golden Boy-type venue out there in the East Coast. I think Golden Boy, you know, obviously, it's not I don't think. I mean, obviously, they're trying to gain the East Coast fans, and which is a good thing, you know, because Golden Boy is based a primary West Coast-based promotion. But I think that's good that they have Luis Collazo in this kind of form, though. I think he would be a perfect guy. He'll be a tester guy. He ain't going to get up to the title, I don't, in my opinion. But he'll be the guy to be on the undercard of a Brooklyn Barclay Center type of fight, type of deal, you know, because that's going to bring out the fans. I mean, he's got these – New York loves Luis Collazo. And I think – personally, I think a lot of people love watching him. I know I do. I mean, I remember him and Berto fighting, and he gave Berto everything. I mean, he almost beat Berto. He lost by unanimous decision, but the scores were close. You know, him and then his fight with Freddie Hernandez – you know, Ricky Hatton. I mean, he's a hell of a fighter, very entertaining fighter. And I'd like to see I hope that's what they do with him. I think that's the best route and to use him because they tried fighting him at the Staples Center. And like, I dog on L.A. all the time. We're horrible fans out here for the most part. You know, we're too Hollywood. We show up at the main event. It's like if you ever watch a Laker game, you know, we don't go to the Laker games in the first quarter. We go after halftime, or maybe a little bit before halftime. Same with Dodger games. My old co-host, Joel, used to dog me on this all the time, which I had no idea because I'm not a Dodger fan, but he used to say, you know, Dodger fans, you know, we're so Hollywood, we don't show up until, like, the seventh inning stretch. You know, and that's true. And if we do show up early, we're leaving early. So that's how LA fans are, and I know New York is more of a stronger fan base as far as when they support their teams, and Collazo is no different, and I think that's how they're going to use him, because they'll definitely come out full force to support the kids.
You know, on that topic, I think in having more fights, big fights like this on the East Coast, I think it's such a good thing for boxing as a sport, because a lot of the roots of boxing are, you know, in Brooklyn and in Philadelphia, and, you know, and I think it's important to keep true to those roots, and I think it's good to have shows out there. You know, there's obviously a lot of shows on the East Coast, but we, you know, you might see some in Atlantic City, the big shows, you know, sometimes in Philly. But, you know, I think that's going to be a really good thing for boxing as a sport.
Yeah, definitely, and I can agree with you more. You know, we'll talk about this more later, maybe in like the rants and raves section of our show, or portion of our show, but. It's a great thing, exactly like you said. The roots are in the East Coast, definitely. I'm a little disappointed in the turnout from what I heard, how they were giving out tickets left, like you know, left and right. I had a friend who actually was working at the Barclays Center. I didn't even know she was working there, and she texted me and said, "Hey, I'm at a boxing event." I was like, "Why are you there? You don't like boxing?" She's like, "I work here." I'm like, "Oh, crap." You know, and she told me, "It's empty." And this is right when the beginning of the card started, you know. And I knew, we all knew going into it that Golden Boy was handing out tickets to all, free tickets to people who presented a valid Brooklyn driver's license or ID. And, you know, so it kind of tells me they didn't do too well selling it. I'm not, and I'm not blaming the fans out in Brooklyn or nothing by any means. I'm blaming a lot on Golden Boy. I think maybe it wasn't promoted that well. You know, we always hear lately Golden Boy having problems selling tickets compared to when Top Rank goes to Home Depot Center and does 7,000, you know.
It's a pretty big venue. I think they said it seats like 20,000 people, so I don't know. You know who was there is Sean Porter, who we're going to have on later in the show. He was actually there at the fight.
Oh, so we are having Sean Porter. That was confirmed.
Yes, that's confirmed. I'm sorry, for 6:15 time.
Oh, it's all good. No. See, this is how you and me become cool again. You give me good news like this, and we're cool. You know, like it's better late than never. You know what I mean? So,
I'm gonna give you some bad news. I'm offline for like 3 minutes. I'm having a little technical problem, so I'm gonna hang up and call right back in.
All right, no problem. No problem. I'm gonna get in. I'm gonna get into the next fight anyway. So you call back in, and we'll talk about the next fight. Also on that card, which was that. No problem. Also on that card, which was a really good fight to have in Brooklyn, Brooklyn prospect, Eddie Gomez, he fought Saul Benitez, knocked him out with a vicious left hook. I mean, it was funny because I didn't think it was that vicious when I first saw it. And you watch it again, and it just landed perfect. It was, he timed it perfectly. You know, everything about it was perfect. And he continues to make a name for himself in as a prospect, and he's a young kid. I think he had an historic. I think he only has one loss in his amateur career. You know, he's 20 years old. 11 wins, loses his record 11-0, 8 of them by knockout. He's also a Puerto Rican fighter, Puerto Rican out of New York. You know, we all know that's a recipe for success. If he continues his run in as a prospect, this might smell of good things for Golden Boy or whoever may have him later on down the road. I mean, yeah, he fought a guy who was 1-2 and hit the, you know, but he's fought some decent fighters. I mean, he hasn't fought world beaters yet, but obviously he's not at such a young stage of his career, but he's very, very, very dangerous, very strong, very entertaining, very talented. He is a prospect to watch out for, definitely. I think that I think he's one of the hottest prospects out. Keep an eye out. I mean, later on the show, we're going to open up a little new thing, I think, that I want to try and run with. And it's a prospect watch. And we had we have a few prospects that fought this weekend that we got to talk about. But Eddie Gomez is definitely one to watch out for. Like to see what they do with him now. I would definitely like to see them start moving him up in competition. 20 years old, though, so who knows. I don't know. Is Emily's back on yet? Well, when Emily's back on, I'm sure she'll cut in. But he's definitely a solid fighter. You know, if Emily's not in, let me ask David Chen. David Chen, can you chime in real quick?
What's going on, guys?
David, did you get a chance to catch the Eddie Gomez fight at all?
I did not, actually. I'm just about to get to it myself. If Emily's back on, I'm sure she's going to hear about it.
Oh, if Emily's back on, then I'll talk to her about it real quick.
Yeah, I did. I saw that fight. I was interested. I wasn't interested in the fight until I saw Dan Rafael tweet out that, you know, Eddie Gomez had beaten Saul Benitez. And I thought, Saul Benitez, he's from here in Arizona. He fought one of my fighters here in Phoenix in June. Obviously, that was a great knockout for Eddie Gomez. It was a strange choice of opponent. I think I heard that Benitez was a late replacement. I think he was only 1-0 or had 1 or 2 fights only. But
yeah, Benitez, I think at the time, only had 3 fights, 4 fights now. But what do you call it? Eddie's definitely a dangerous guy. What do you think of that left hook? Did not look as powerful as it evidently was, you know?
Yeah, correct. Well, first, you know, it looked like when I heard that it was going to be Solo, and I know him, and actually, again, Sean Porter has sparred with Solo here in Phoenix, and I think he might be planning to come here again to get some more sparring with him. He looked pretty good at first, and then, you know, obviously Eddie laid him out, and when I talked to Jose Sr. about it, he was like, oh, yeah, Eddie's a really good prospect. He's been around the sport a long time, and I don't know. I didn't know much about him until that happened.
Now, let me ask you, you work with a few prospects yourself. You know, everyone knows you have Benavidez. You have a lot of talented prospects that you work with. And you and me have talked about this, about moving up these young prospects too quickly. Eddie Gomez is 20 years old. Do you think it's time to maybe move up competition?
Okay, he's got 10 fights. Just pulling up his record off Boxer to see what his opposition has been like. I mean, he's been fighting fighters with a lot of experience, it looks like. Certainly somebody better than Saul Benitez would have been good. I'm guessing, you know, they kind of do that sometimes on the big cards so that, you know, they get the exposure on the big card, but they still get to win. You know, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be interested to know who they were going to have him fight, because I just looked up Saul's record. He's 1-3 now, including that loss, and that's obviously not, you know, any step up for Eddie Gomez in any way. But, it's probably time for maybe a small step up. I mean, nothing crazy. I'm totally okay with taking a fighter slow. Do you know what his amateur career was like?
If I'm not mistaken, it was phenomenal. I don't want to say exactly how many wins, but I know that he only lost. And I was talking about his amateur career with a buddy of mine who I was watching the fights with yesterday. And I think it was like 80, 90, and 1 or something like that.
Okay, so to me, that says that, you know, obviously he has that experience. He's comfortable. You know, I'm more comfortable moving a fighter like that has a high number of amateur fights along a little faster because they have the ring experience. They have, you know, they're not going to get nervous or, you know, things like that. You take a fighter that had a real limited amateur career that went pro early, I think you want to move them, you know, they kind of do their amateur career in the pros like Chavez Jr. has done, essentially.
Definitely. And one thing about, and another great thing about him, too, about Eddie Gomez is, and I brought this up, I don't think you're online yet. He's Puerto Rican. And
oh, nice.
From New York, Brooklyn. So what perfect kind of guy to promote, right? A Puerto Rican out of Brooklyn. Now you got the Barclays Center. Again, I'm referring to Barclays Center a lot because I think this is the future for East Coast boxing. And it's a great thing. And for a guy to be Puerto Rican, and we know Puerto Ricans, they support their fans till the death. Most cases, you know, so he's definitely going to be a guy to watch out for. We're going to keep him on our prospect watch, most definitely. Also, while you were away, I wanted to let you know, and I was going to throw a curveball later at you, but I'll give you a little head start right now. I came up with a little segment that I want for our show. And, you know, as you know, we always have a lot of these top prospects or prospects come on the show, we interview. I want to do a prospect watch, and I know you have two of them that fought, as well as I had one of them that fought over the weekend. So later on in the show, that was my little curveball I'm going to throw at you. We're going to talk about T-Rez and Javon, as well as Javier Torres as well. So I just want to inform you here. But let's go on to the next card before we might have a Ray Beltran coming in soon. But the next fight on that card. Now let me just say, everyone listening, we're going to talk about this fight. Stay awake, please. Don't fall asleep like you probably did during the fight. And that goes for you, Emily. You got to be awake here with me. Devin Alexander the Great outboxed the hell out of Randall. One punch. I'm calling him One Punch Bailey right now, because that's all he had was one punch he was looking for. Oh man. Do you think this was – it was almost, to me, in my opinion, I know Devin outboxed the guy, and he did exactly what he had to do. I wouldn't even get mad to – I'm not too mad at him about his performance. I mean, people were saying he didn't perform that well. I mean, how you kind of – it's hard to perform against a guy that you know is only looking for one punch. And you know he's a – you know, Bailey's a dangerous puncher. Don't get me wrong. So you got to stay away from that right hand. But did we learn anything from Alexander at this weight class again? Like, after putting on a hell of a performance against Maidana?
Well, like you said, he kind of did what he had to do to win the fight. And I want to come back to this. I think we have Ray on hold here. Do you want to get him? We can come back to this? Or,
yeah.
Because I want to talk about this guy a little bit.
We'll come back to this. We'll definitely come back to that and make sure the fans don't fall asleep when we talk about Devin Alexander and Bailey. But we got our first guest. He's a friend of the show. He's been on a couple times already. He has a fight coming up that we're going to talk about. Ray Beltran, the champ, the new champ after defeating Hank Lundy. Ray, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? How you doing?
Oh, man, doing great, man, after watching some great fights last night. And, you know, I know that you were in you were at the like, last week, if I'm not mistaken, weren't you, at the Home Depot Center?
Yeah. At the
the Brandon fight.
It was a great fight.
And first of all, how was the atmosphere out there at the Home Depot Center?
Oh, everybody was excited, you know, about the Brandon Rios fight. I mean, one of those fights that don't happen often, you know what I mean? Every once in a while. So everybody was like speechless, you know. It was a great, great fight.
Yeah, it definitely was, man. I mean, I was at the edge of my seat watching that fight. But, you know, enough about that real quick, man. I heard that you're going to be defending your title coming up, I think, in December. Is it official yet, or what's going on with that?
Well, it's not official yet. It seems like 90%, you know, for sure. I haven't signed a contract yet, but I heard that I'm gonna fight in December 6th in Vegas. I'm gonna defend my title.
Oh, nice! Now is that gonna be is it gonna be a Friday night fight, show box, or anything that you know of?
It's going to be in ESPN, but I heard it's going to be Thursday, but they told me it's going to be in ESPN. That's all I know for now.
Do you any idea on the opponent?
Yeah, it's a guy from Korea, Ji Hoon Kim. You know?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the opponent. I think it's going to be a good fight.
Definitely, and that is. I've seen him fight a few times, and he's a pretty solid fighter as well. It should be a great matchup. While you're training for that, you're going to be working out with Manny Pacquiao for his fight as well, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be working with him and get somebody else to spar with, you know what I mean, for that fight. I think the fight is going to be a hard, you know, hard fight. Jim is a tough guy, you know, very, very tough guy, so. Not an easy guy, so you're going to get ready 100% for that fight also.
Nice. So while preparing, you know, helping Manny fight, you know, his arch nemesis, his rival, you know, do you think this is going to, it'll probably even help you out even more training with Manny to fight Ji-Hoon Kim?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it doesn't matter if, with Manny, it's not about his softball. The thing is, it's another level, you know, he always pushed me and push me to the limit, you know. So after I spar with them, when I spar with some other guys, I feel a big difference. So I like the idea to spar with them, you know, in the same training camp and take advantage and be away from the fight also.
Nice. Now, do you have any idea when that will start with you and Manny as far as Manny getting ready for Marquez?
Well, I heard that we're going to start the 30th. That's what I heard, but, you know, Manny's supposed to be here the last week. But, you know,
so you say Manny's never, you never know what day Manny's going to come officially.
Yeah, you never know. Manny's very unpredictable about that, you know. But I'm pretty sure if I mean, he's training over there in Philippines. But I think it should be better that he already be here, you know, training and getting focused for the big fight with Marquez, a very important fight, you know.
You know, have you ever gone to the Philippines to help him train, actually?
Yeah, I was there in Cebu with the second fight with Barreira.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was
nice.
Cebu, yeah, one time. Yeah, it's a nice, very nice, beautiful country, you know, people are so nice over there. And it was one of my I think it was, I mean, one of our best training camps, you know, with Manny.
Right. Obviously, the Marquez and, I don't know, Josh, if you agree with this, the Marquez and Pacquiao fights have created somewhat of a rivalry between Mexican and Filipino fans.
Yeah.
Do any Mexican family members, friends, give you a hard time about working with Pacquiao? I mean, obviously, you have to do it. It's a huge opportunity. He's a great fighter. I'm just wondering if maybe it gives you a hard time about it.
A hard time about working with him because he's fighting Marquez, is it?
Yeah.
Not really, because, you know, I mean, I know Manny for, like, 9 years, and I don't know Marquez, so to me, he's a Mexican, but, I mean, Manny is more emotional, you know, it's my friend, so, you know what I mean? Marquez, I don't even know him, you know, so to me, it's not about being where you're from, it's not about race, to me, it's my friend, and I'm with him all the whole way, you know, he really take care of me, you know, a nice guy to me, so I don't even know Marquez. So,
are you? And I think I remember when I very first met you, like something six, seven years ago, that you were working with Pat Manny, and I was like, "Who is this guy?" I didn't know, you know, at the time who he was, and just getting into boxing. But are you doing anything different to prepare for this fight in December than you've done in the past?
Well, I think I train different. I think every opponent is different, so you make different adjustments. Depends on the opponent. You do different plans, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, also the different that I'm doing for this fight, I'm going to train harder, get a strength conditioning coach to get stronger, you know? Other than that, difference about the plan to execute in the fight is going to be for the sparring, you know?
Now, looking at 2013, are you planning to stay pretty active in 2013? You have a lot of fights, or are you going for maybe another title shot for one of the bigger titles?
Well, when I think about Gene, you know, this fight coming up, and I don't make plans yet for the 13 because I have to pass this test first. But I wish finally my opportunity comes the 2013 after I win the fight. That's my number one goal right now.
Okay. Josh, do you have anything else?
Ray, you know, last time we had you on the show, we talked you talked about how basically, you thought about, you know, retiring as a pro in boxing unless if you get screwed again, you know, like against Hank Lundy, you know, thankfully you didn't get screwed. You know, you're tired of getting screwed and all the BS that was going on. Now that you have the title, has it turned your motivation, like, you know, you're motivated to get a title now? Are you even more motivated to make sure you retain your title and keep that title?
I'm definitely in a different mentality right now. Still motivated because I want to be a world champion. I believe I got the talent, you know. And I don't think about retirement right now. You know, that was before. I was really going through a lot of, hard times. You know, emotionally, before, you know, because the last two fights that I didn't. In the past, and I got school, so that's what I was thinking like that, because I started being happy with the business, you know. I started being like hating, you know, and have a lot of anger in me. I said, you know what, I don't want to live like that. I want to have this kind of life in boxing. So that's what I was thinking about they screw me again, like, yeah, I'm done, you know. But
right.
At the same time, I believe God had plans for me. And I never lose faith. I never lose faith. I never stop training. I never think about, I never have my mind, change my mind. Like, I've always been a winner. And I have a winner mentality, never been a loser. And that's why I train hard, and that's why I prepare to win. Never to lose or to give up. And this fight to me is very important. I always get ready. I always train hard to win. And this fight is very important to me, and very difficult fight, very hard fight. And I'm very focused and concentrated and to win this fight, because I have the hope after the fight to fight for a title shot. And I'm very motivated.
Right. Now, there's been talks, or there's been, you know, I know Mr. Talkative Hank Lundy has talked and said that he would love to, you know, get a rematch with you. Is that something that maybe, once you defend your title, would you like to give him a rematch again?
You know what? Look, first of all, the last two fights that I had before, I didn't lose a fight. I got robbed. Still go. I don't duck nobody. You know what I mean? I fight anybody. So this
right.
a question to me that is not even, you don't even make sense. You know what I mean? I'm at 135 pounds. I mean, he's in the rankings. I'm in the rankings. I mean, sooner or later, we're going to face each other again. You know what I mean? But I'm not fighting you for ego. You know what I mean? I beat him. Everybody thought that I beat him. It's not that I was like a doubt that I beat him. You know, I beat him.
Right.
But it's that, you know what I mean? It's not like, he just can't accept that he lost. You know what I mean? And he gambled and he lost, you know. I gambled like before and I lost. And all you have to do is deal with it and get over it and just keep fighting, you know. I mean, I'm not going nowhere. I'm got no problem to give him a rematch. I mean, I want to fight the best, you know. To me, I fight anybody. I don't care. If I fight in the future with them, the same thing gotta be some convenience for me. I don't like to be on the same page. I'm going forward.
Right.
You know what I mean? To better things. I mean, if you're a kind of person to stay in the same page again and again and again, so, I mean, you're not gonna go nowhere. You know what I mean? So to me, I win this big fight, and I'm going forward. So to me, in the future, if I make a big fight and we face each other, great. I can fight him. You know, to me, I got no problem to give him a rematch or fight him again. That's not a problem for me.
The rematch,
definitely.
I would love to see for Ray would be against Bulgari, because you won the fight. There, you shouldn't have gotten, you know, the decision that you did. He's fighting Richard Avril at the end of November for the WBA title. I would love to see you get a shot at the winner of that fight.
You know, that's a different situation, because it's not that he beat me. I got robbed. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
A different situation. It's not, if he beat me, and hey, I got nothing to say. He beat me, and I mean, what can I do? You know what I mean? I got the same time to train and the same advantage of time and to get ready. If I lose, I lose. Hey, I got to accept it and just keep training, keep going forward. Like I say, we're in the ranks. I'm not going nowhere. I'm going to stay 135 pounds. Sooner or later, we're going to face each other again. So let's do it, you know. With Hank Lundy, I mean, with Bogier, who, as you know, I respect him. He's a great fighter. He's a very talented guy. But, you know, some fighters, they're using the side aid and they spoil them and they give the fights. Nobody gave me nothing. Everything I got is I earn it. Me and the people that support me all the time and my friends, and that's it. But the rest, I don't have no promoter, no manager that buy me the fight or whatever, you know. Nobody has to do this shit for me. All I have to do is fight and earn it, you know. And just with the support of my people, my friends, you know, and people that really believe in me.
Well, you definitely established yourself, you know, as one of the top fighters in your weight class with the win over Hank Lundy, and I'm excited. I know a lot of other fans are excited. Real quick before we wrap up, I was wondering how your cousin is doing in Mexico, we're going to see him fighting again.
You know, I haven't heard about him for like 2.5-3 weeks. and it's been good. I don't know if he's a trainer already. Because, you know, they in Mexico, they get a lot of attention over there more than you. I have a name over there. It's even more popular than here. It's easier to be popular over there than here. So I think right now they're just enjoying, you know, and having fun over there with their friends and all that. But I heard, all I know, I think it's doing good. Just I think it's going to start training soon and I'm going to get ready again for whatever's coming.
Well, thank you for coming on the show again. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys for your time and give me the opportunity and to be heard by the fans, you know, and you guys, and God bless you.
Thanks, Ray, man. Thanks. You're always welcome on the show, man.
All right, thank you, man. Take care.
All right, that was Ray Beltran. Man, I can't wait to see you. I love watching Ray fight. He's always exciting because I like watching him mostly when he's fighting against guys that, you know, people think that he has no chance against, because I know he always does. He's always that type of fighter to, he could pull off an upset anytime. You know, he's a, you know, as a gambler, he's the type of guy that I'd like to put money on because he's usually the underdog and he pulls it up.
And, you know, he really does take any fight. Like, he never dodges any fight, and he just has, you know, such heart. So I was just, you know, I'm still glad that he got the decision that he did. He deserved it. I mean, he deserved it on other occasions and didn't get it. And, you know, he's stayed in the sport, and he's good for the sport. He's fun to watch. Everybody loves to watch him fight.
Definitely, definitely. Before we get back into Bailey Alexander, real quick, call a number for anyone who wants to talk boxing, anything. 347-215-7598. Go ahead and call that number and talk boxing. You know, you're going to talk to David Chan a little bit. David Chan is going to patch you in, and we're going to talk boxing. Also, don't forget Mondays for all the Spanish speakers out there. Leave It in the Ring presents Noche de Boxeo. Check that show out. Great show for all you Spanish speakers. It's 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And on Thursdays with your host, Dave Duenes, and the Dark Cloud, Gabriel Montoya. Leave It in the Ring Radio. Make sure you check that out. 3 hours of box talk, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And don't forget to get your Undisputed Fight magazine at UndisputedFightMag.com. Online digital publication. And it is amazing. Make sure you check that out. If you're a boxing fan, boxing head, boxing addict, you have to get it. I'm not lying. Got it. Anyway, so now that I got your attention, Emily, what's your take on Bailey Alexander?
All right, you're talking about, you're calling one punch Bailey, right? I was reading up on it, and apparently Bailey set a record, a CompuBox record, for the lowest number of punches landed in a 12-round fight with 45 punches in the whole fight. So it's like 4 punches a round, less than that.
Oh, man.
And Alexander 165. And I was doing a little checking, and, like, the record for most punches thrown in a championship fight, or for most punches landed, it's, like, something like 600-something punches. So these guys together didn't, you know, have, like, 1/6 of those punches.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say, really, to tell you the truth. The fact that you just threw that statistic out to me just, like, I can't believe it. I believe it. I mean, that was just, you know, Bailey, we saw Bailey do the same thing against Mike Jones, and I'm not talking about the rapper from Houston. You know, we all saw that he was waiting for that one good punch, that one solid punch, and he got it, and it worked out for him. That's great. But, man, like, you got to go into the fight against Alexander, especially knowing that you're not going to probably have that same kind of outcome. You know Alexander's going to get in and get out. You know Alexander's going to hold. You know that Alexander is fast. So you're going to have to set the punch up. And I noticed every time he threw, at least throw a jab, you know, once your typical 1-2. Throw that jab, then the right hand followed behind it. And I saw when he did do that, it actually looked like it was working. And Alexander got a big head, so he had a big target. But it just seemed like Bailey did not want to do nothing. I mean, he just wanted to throw that right hand only. I personally can't stand that. I mean, especially if you're a professional boxer. And in his case, he's a professional boxer with a title. So, I mean, you're not no chump if you got a title in most cases, you know. And I don't think Randall Bailey is any kind of chump or weak fighter or not talented at all. I think he's very talented. But you would think for someone like that, you would have more skills to be able to at least use your other hand as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what was he wearing into the ring also when he walked in?
Oh, I I'll tell you this. I'm glad you reminded me of that because, you know, at first I thought David Alexander was about to fight Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat.
A costume or something.
I did not know what he was wearing. He had like a Sub-Zero Hannibal Lecter mask. I mean, it just came across his mouth and eyes a little bit, and it was blue, and I thought that I was watching Mortal Kombat Part 8, you know, whatever number they're at in movies. I know you don't watch movies, so you do not get the analogy, but it's okay. You know, yeah, I don't know what he was wearing. And if it was for intimidation factor, it obviously didn't work. Devin Alexander now, you know, I have said this before, Ray, we had Ray on and everything. And let me ask you this. You know, he came off as a great performance against, you know, Marcos Maidana, who's another heavy-handed fighter, and he basically dominated Marcos. Do you think Devin put on a lackluster performance, like something that didn't teach us anything about him at 147? Or do you think it was more so Bailey's fault? What's your take on that?
I mean, it just could be their styles just aren't compatible. I mean, you know, Maidana is a much more of an action-type fighter, so he's kind of forced to step it up a little bit in the action area, you know? I think that he had to win the fight.
Yeah, you know, with Alexander, I like him a lot. I think he's talented, he's fast, he's quick, you know. But I'm still kind of questioning him at 147 as far as hanging in there with the big boys, you know, like, can he beat, you know, a hard puncher, you know, a guy who's going to hurt him, you know? I mean, I think he can, but I still feel like he hasn't been fully tested at 147. You know, I'm curious to see what they do with him now there.
Do you think that the time he lost being with Don King for that period of time, you know, kind of set him back in terms of, you know, pursuing a longer, more successful career? I mean,
Maybe a little bit. Maybe, you know, I don't think too much, though, because I think he was already going a pretty good path. You know, I mean, he got his fight against Bradley, and we saw that turned out. You know, I think the way he acted in that fight kind of ruined things for him, like ruined his public persona, his public perception with the fans. The fact that he kind of quit, I guess you could say, you know, he said I couldn't see or whatever. You know, we know as boxing fans, we don't want to hear a fighter say, I can't see. I mean, we don't care if you're blinded by both eyes. You know, we want you to continue. We just saw, and we're going to get into it in a second, we just saw Juan Pablo Cano fight with three eyelids. Like, that was the most nasty, one of the nastiest cuts I've seen. I'm really thinking I got an idea for Halloween now. I mean, it was that disgusting. And he continued to fight and almost beat Pauly. You know, so
maybe,
we don't.
Maybe Victor Ortiz, you know, because they're both kind of.
No, you know, I really don't like bringing up Victor Ortiz on the show. I always get mad when I have to hear his name. But yeah, Victor Ortiz is on hand too. There, you know, I don't know. He's scouting his new opponent. You know, I'll tell you this. We're gonna get into this later, but I gotta get it off my chest since you brought up the name. I would love to see Victor and Danny Garcia go at it and just see Danny just crack the hell out of Victor. I just gotta let that off. Oh, that felt better.
I don't know. Okay, go ahead. I don't know about that.
Oh no, we'll talk about that later. It sounds like you and me can discuss, have a good debate on that. But yeah, that, you know, that's it for Alexander Bailey. It wasn't as great as I thought it could have been. I was really looking forward to that fight actually going into it. But at the end of the day, it kind of let me down. And it was a good thing that that was the opening card, because after that, it was nothing but exciting fights. And that's why we're going to get into the next fight.
Wasn't that supposed to be the main event fight that got canceled and everybody was disappointed that it got moved?
Bailey got hurt, yeah. Bailey had gotten hurt, pulled out for or got it postponed. So it was the main event, and good thing it wasn't. But before our next caller calls in, we'll talk a little bit about it now until he calls in and we'll get into it. The fight that I think is fight of the night, Peter Kidd, Chocolate Quillen versus Hassan Nadam. I'm glad that I got to watch Showtime and learn how to say Hassan's name. I thought they were going to say the rest of it and learn how to say it, but I couldn't. Wow. I mean, 6 knockdowns. And let me say this. Emily, if I asked you, or if I told you, this fighter got knocked down 6 times, would you think that guy finished the fight?
Yeah, no. We'd say, A, he didn't finish the fight, and B, clearly that fight was a blowout, when that fight wasn't a blowout.
All right. Quillen dropped Nadam in round 4 twice. In round 6 twice. And in the final round twice. Now, the scores were 115-107. I had it closer. I had it pretty much even going into that 12th. I think I had Quillen ahead going into the 12th round. And basically, if Nadam won the 12th, it would have been a draw. Nadam was on his way winning that 12th round until he got caught again. But despite what the judges said, I thought it was close. Did you think it was really close, or do you think the scores were pretty accurate at 115-107?
I agree that if that 12th round hadn't gone the way it did, if he hadn't been knocked down, it would have been a draw. I agree with that. And I think a lot of people did. I didn't watch the fight live, but I did, you know, I was watching Twitter live, you know, while the fight was going on. I was doing other things. And it appeared that most people agree with you. Most people thought that, you know, people were saying, wow, Kid Chocolate has a chance to lose this thing. And then, of course, he got the 2 knockdowns, so it wasn't relevant.
I mean, hey, I'll tell you this. You bring up fantasy boxing, I'll bring it up. I was rooting for a draw because I took the draw in that fight. And, man, that was I thought I had it almost. Anyways, Peter Quillen proved to, I think, gain a lot of fans, first and foremost. I think a lot of people hate on Peter. I think he gets a bad rap because he's a little different. He's a little weird. And he is. I've had the chance to talk to him in person and interview him. And this whole thing about Pluto and all that, he's a little crazy, you know? But he's entertaining nonetheless. And he put on a hell of a performance, but Nadam put on a hell of a performance as well. I think Quillen had a lot of trouble with Nadam's movement, had a lot of trouble with Nadam's jab, but he ended up trying to time it, and he was lunging in with that left hook and timing it perfectly. I mean, but let's talk about Quillen first, because I want to talk about a little bit about Nadam. Do you think Quillen, this fight proved a lot about Quillen, that he's a real type champion in that middleweight division?
Well, yes. I mean, I think it does prove a lot. I like the guy a lot. You know, you said I talked to him on the phone, you know, on a personal, you know, just talking back and forth and a normal conversation, and he's just a nice guy. He interacts with his fans. I think he's good for the sport. You know, he got his name. I don't know if you know how he got his name, throwing out chocolate to the crowd. He's a little different, but he's nice. Like, he's not a jerk. And you know, he's not different, like, obnoxious different, I don't think. He's just, you know, he's a little different. But I think I'm wondering how he would do against somebody that is, I mean, he wasn't struggling, but there's a lot of rounds there he didn't win. And I don't
right.
know what
I mean,
Dom is on, you know. I mean, he obviously can take a punch and get up and keep fighting. What else do we really know about him, and how does he compare to other fighters in that weight class as an opponent? I mean, I think,
you know, I'll say this.
His defense a little bit. He's a little bit wide open, and, you know, I don't know. I think he has it, for sure. He's got a great trainer.
I'll
Eric Brown's an amazing trainer.
Yeah, shout out to Eric Brown. Real nice guy, too. But, you know, and he went 2-0 that last night, too, by the way. because he also trained Paulie. But, you know, I'll say this. Kid Chocolate, to me, did struggle. In the rounds that he did not win, he struggled. In my opinion, he couldn't get off. He couldn't time the guy. But he made it up for the rounds that he did win because he won them by a wide margin, you know? And I think this proves a lot about Kid Chocolate. I think he's talented. I think he is good. He's still young. He still has a lot to learn. I think he still has a little bit of maturity to learn to gain inside the ring as far as keeping his hands up, not tiring out, not letting his opponents off the hook when he has them. I saw times where he kind of looked gassed out in certain rounds, you know?
He was taking shots. He was definitely gassing out towards the end of the fight. And I think they said on the broadcast it was the first time he'd seen that 12th round. So maybe that's something for him to look at as well, the conditioning end of things.
Yeah, I think that then that's one of the things. You know, and he had a lot of pressure on him in this fight. I mean, I don't think he's ever done so much publicity like he's done for any fight like he did for this. Having all the photo shoots, from that, from, you know, leaving training camps to training in Brooklyn to this and that. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be learned, but he's very talented. We're going to talk more about that in a bit. We got to call our next guest. We're about to call Yusef Mack. He's fighting Carl Frost coming up. So let's, producer David Chin, why don't we give Yusef a call? But here we go. We got the call.
Hello.
Hi, Yusef.
Yusef.
Hi, this is Emily Pandalakis from the Boxing Fix. How are you doing?
How you doing?
Thank you for joining us on our show. I have on the line with us also is Josh McDaniel.
What's going on, Yusef? How's everything going? How's training camp going for you, man? Have you started up?
Good, man. Yeah. I'm in training right now.
You're at the gym, man.
So,
You're at the gym right now?
Hello? No, I'm in training right now. I'm in the bed right now.
That's dedication there on a Sunday night, later night.
Yeah, man, I'm just in the bed, that's
all. So you're fighting Carl Frost. This is obviously a big fight for you. Are you excited to have the shot? What can fans look for on the night that you fight him?
I'm very excited. I want anybody to look forward to me winning, coming back to the U.S. with it, you know, with the IBF right around my waist.
Nice. How much pressure is it for you to have to go fight him for his title over in his, you know, in his backyard pretty much? How difficult is that?
It's hard in the backyard because, you know, it's always a crowd. Every crowd is the same to me. I got him. I'll see it's more pressure for him because he's in his country and he got to prove that he can beat me or knock me out. So I think it's more pressure on him that he got to win. If he don't win, I feel that he's going to let his country down. So, you know.
Definitely. Now, are you doing, and part of your training, you know, I know there's a lot of film studying, you know, have you paid attention to his fight, like, against, you know, like Ward or whatever, to learn from that? Or are you more you know.
Yeah, he got a problem with guys that sleep. Like, if you stand on the street and dangling, he sort of seems to outpunch dudes and try to sit there and bang with him because he's faster. So my whole thing is to take a little page from Ward's book and just box him and try to outslick him and make him pay off his mistakes.
Nice. Now, who are you, is there anyone in particular that you've been sparring with and preparing for, Frost?
Up and coming kid, Jesse Hart, Steve Cunningham, you know, Dr. Smith, a couple of dudes, you know. I got a lot of good sparring, man.
Yeah, did you go to the fights in Brooklyn yesterday?
No, I watch him on TV. I didn't go.
I know you're from Philly. Are you friends with Danny Garcia? Is it, you know, is he somebody that you've
interviewed? That's my friend. That's one of my friends.
Yeah. Okay, you must be happy for him. I noticed.
Yeah, I'm very happy.
This is like a dumb observation, and you just bear with me, and I just wanted to know if this is a Philly thing. I noticed he was wearing animal print shorts, trunks last night. I noticed when Gabriel Rosado fought, he wore some animal print trunks, and I was just wondering if that's a Philly thing or just so happened, like a coincidence.
It's just a coincidence, you know.
Okay, so we're not going to – are we going to see you in animal print trunks there against Carl Cross?
I don't know, man, whatever. Oh, yeah.
Now, how's you mentioned that you're sparring with Cunningham and everything. How's that been turning out for him as far as, have you noticed how he looks as being in the new division and everything?
Yeah, he just, basically he's helping me out right now, you know. So, you know, he's helping me get ready with the long reach across, on the long arms and the jab and everything. So, by me bothering him, using him for his height and reach, is helping me out a lot with my training.
Nice, nice, nice. Now, and are you train over at the gym in Philly? Is it Schuler's?
Yeah, Schuler's gym.
Nice, nice. And have you, how long have you been training at that gym? Like, you got a lot of people that go from gym to gym or go.
Yeah, I'm the first kid ever in that gym. Like, my uncle is my trainer, and he owns the gym. Convinced my uncle to open the gym in 92 and been open ever since.
Nice. Now, you know, I got a lot of people travel to maybe different states to get away from their hometown. Do you think that's important for some fighters or all fighters, or do you like staying by, you know, in your hometown?
I just learned myself, like every fight that I ever had that when I went away to train the camp, I lost. It's like when I train home, I get an extra energy that makes me want it more because I'm training home. So it's something about me when I train home, I get a hunger, I'm more energy to go in and do what I got to do. But every one of my losses I had went to camp for. Being that I'm staying home, I think I get more energy.
You fought some big names. I mean, a few big names. You've had some wins against them and losses, and I'm wondering what you took away from you have four losses, but I mean, you know, you still have a pretty good record and, you know, this knockout percentage. What do you take away from those losses, and what are you doing, you know, to kind of counter some of that, those things that have happened?
My losses come from me leaving my game plan. Every one of my losses, my game plan was the box and stick to boxing. But then, though, you know, I tell them that my heart got me and my heart took over. And I lost, so my whole game plan for this fight is stick to my boxing, stick to my game plan. Box, box, box. I feel good. I stick to my game plan. I come back to the United States with the win.
Yeah, we'd love to see that title, see you bring the title here.
Yeah.
Anything?
Now,
do you have anything
now, you know, Yusuf, you fought Glenn Johnson, and he retired and recently unretired. What are your thoughts on that as far as him making a comeback?
I think, you know, everybody, I think his time, like, Glenn's an already fighter, he's a good veteran, but, you know, everybody got their time. Like, I think Bernard Hopkins should retire. All them dudes that's over the age limit to retire, let them guys like myself make some money before we retire. They made the money they made, now it's time for us. Pass the torch on and let us make our money and move on with our life.
Nice. Now, before we let you go, man, any social networks and stuff that you want to give a shout out to, or the people could follow your career at?
I just want to give a shout out to my hometown Philadelphia, man, and look forward to me coming back on the 20th, maybe on the 17th, and I come back here to the United States on the 20th. They had that better on my week.
Nice, man.
When are you getting over there, Yusuf? When are you going to go to the UK? Like, you fight on the 17th, when are you going
over? I'm going to the 10th. I'm going over a week before.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on.
Nice.
We sure appreciate it. Tell Mark that we appreciate it as well. I got in touch with him today, and he called you, so I appreciate you coming on the short.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
No problem, man. Thank you. Good luck on your fight, too.
Thank you, Yusuf.
All right. That was Yusuf Mack. We also got we got Ryan Bivens calling in right now from Sweet Boxing. Ryan, what's going on?
Oh, he probably wanted to
just
talk to
Yusuf. Yeah, that's why I tweeted y'all
Ryan,
about earlier. Hey, what?
Oh, what's going on, Ryan?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to get at Yusuf, you know, about the Carl Frye's DVDs I had to drop off for him 2 weeks ago. He was over in the UK at the time, I think, on like doing a press tour. So I just left him at the gym. And while I was there, I guess I got a workout in anyways. So I guess I'll try him again Monday.
He did say he's been watching video too, so I was assuming that he got your stuff too, probably.
Anyways, as far as weekend fights go.
Yeah, since we got you on the line, what's going on, man? How about these weekend fights?
Yeah, man, that killing Hassan and Dom fight, that was off the chain. It was a lot closer than the judges had it, but killing, you know, he won. You know, how can you overcome 6 knockdowns? It's like impossible.
Yeah, so, like, that's what I was saying to Emily earlier. Like, Ryan, if you didn't watch that fight and I told you, you know, this guy got knocked down 6 times, would you have even thought it would have been close?
No, I would have never thought it was close. Honestly, going into the last round, I said, you know, if Killen doesn't win this round, it could conceivably could have lost this fight, you know, depending on who was judging it. But, unfortunately, the judges
right.
that were there, they weren't they couldn't possibly have been impartial with scores of what 115 and 107. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, some people didn't think Killen won a round apart from the ones where he knocked, you know, Hassan down. I give him a little bit more credit than that, but I mean, Hassan definitely won. I would say a majority of the rounds.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you 100%. Like, I think Quillen won maybe 1 or 2 rounds other than the ones that he knocked down his opponent. But, you know, there's some toss-up rounds, you know, and the rounds that Quillen lost, he didn't look good when he lost those rounds, you know. Nadam outboxed him and everything. He had problems with that jab. You know, it makes you wonder, some of these
I guess the way Killen fights, he just kind of lets people outwork him, and he relies on catching you with something that's going to make you pay, and make you second guess throwing back. But he's not the type of fighter that's going to go in there and focus on throwing 60, 70 punches, making sure he wins a round of no matter what you do. He's not going to force the fight on you. You know, he fights off the back foot. He makes you come to him. You know, he sees an opening and he takes it. And unfortunately for Enda, he leaves a lot of, openings in the way he fights. He's just very open for that straight right hand and those left hooks. But I've liked both of these guys. You know, I've been following their careers for a while. I think they're both, top 5 middleweights, and I thought last night proved it.
Now let me play matchmaker and ask you something here. Triple G, good. That's what I like to call him, versus Quillen. Who do you like in that match?
That's a tough one. I can't even pick a winner right now. But because both of them kind of, like to time their opponents. And if Killen was to win the fight, it would be based on the fact that he is the taller and longer guy. I think if he can keep GGG at the end of his jab, then he should win. GGG would have to, you know, work to get inside and stay there to win the fight, essentially.
Nice.
Brian,
Emily?
You also put the fight up with Kell Brook and Saldivia, and I appreciate you putting up the Saldivia page. That was cool. I tweeted it out to Samson and Nathan, actually, earlier today, too. I was wondering who you want to see Kell Brook face now after that performance, and if you thought that, you know, beating Saldivia was a, you know, does that really show that he's a better fighter with Saldivia's record being primarily in Argentina? You know, do you think he's as good as everybody's talking about right now with all the buzz? I mean, he did look great against Saldivia, obviously. And then also, who do you want to see him fight next? And do you think they'll even let him fight anybody from the States?
Well, his promoter seems to think that he's ready to get his title shot immediately. So they're going to try to get him to fight Devin Alexander over in England, which is interesting because I'm not sure if Golden Boy will take Devin Alexander in England for that fight, but we'll see. I guess it'll go to the purse bid. But, yeah, that would be kind of a step up for Brook. His opposition definitely has been a little on the soft side so far. I'd say his best, you know, fighter he was in the ring with was Carson Jones. And, you know, that fight was really close. You know, some people thought Jones won even. Let me think. Is Jones better than, is he better than Devin Alexander? Probably not. So, yeah, Carson, Kell Brook, you know, he would be up against it, against Devin Alexander. But I don't really know who else you put him in there with, you know, to prepare him for a guy like Devin. Like, you know, Carson is pretty much top of the line of preparation opponent as you can get.
And you think he's going to stay at the 147, or do you think he's, I mean, because obviously that was an IBF eliminator. Or do you think he's going to, I mean, they're talking about Amir Khan, and I mean, obviously, I think he'd obviously have to go down for that fight.
Well, yeah, the Amir Khan fight would be at 147, you know. With Khan, it's like they're always holding him up. They keep talking about, oh, yeah, we're going to go take over 147. And at one point, Khan, in a view, I think it was a year back or so, said that, you know, he wants to win titles at 154, you know, before he hangs it up. And, he, you know, he just keeps losing at 140. So they keep, like, you know, delaying it like another fight. So I figure he'll beat Carlos Molina most likely because Carlos Molina isn't that big of a puncher. And he's coming up in weight. So he'll probably win that fight. And then I think then they'll finally, if not, you know, rematch him with Danny Garcia, they'll bring him up to the, 147-pound weight division against, who knows.
Nice.
But honestly, I don't think Khan's, going to make it at 147. You know, it's just, his chin is just suspect.
No. I don't think so either. I don't think he's a bad fighter, but.
Now, Ryan, before we let you go and everything, real quick, I'm assuming it's probably the Quillen-Madon fight. What's your fight of the weekend, though, that people need to make sure they go on your site and watch?
Hey, well, besides that fight, I have a really fun fight that I think people should watch. It was shown on SoloBoxAO, which came on right after the Showtime card went off the air. It was, I think it was only a four-rounder. It was between Jose Castro and Carlos Acevedo. Both fighters get dropped in the first round, and one gets dropped twice, and the second time he's knocked out, and he's really knocked out. So, like, you have... So it's like candidate for round of the year and knockout of the year. It's, you know, just, it's fun. You know, it doesn't last long, but you should definitely see it.
Nice. And make sure, let everyone know where they can go check it out. I gave it a shout out earlier on the show. Make sure you let everyone know where they can find your videos and follow you on Twitter.
Right, you can follow me on Twitter at SweetBoxing, and my website is SweetBoxingVideos.wordpress.com, or the shorthand would be SweetBoxingVideos.com. Which WordPress, you know, for free, just decided to give to me.
Great, man. And thanks for... Go ahead, Emma.
I appreciate you doing that every week. You know that. I always try to speak to you to say thank you every week when I'm getting ready. I always have, you know, you're excited to go to watch the fights that I missed, and I appreciate it. And I love that. You know, I watched that fight you just talked about. That was a great knockout. A bad knockout, I guess.
Yeah. I'll see y'all another week. Have a good show.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, that was Ryan Bivens from SweetBoxing.com. SweetBoxingVideos.com. I always mess it up. I always forget the videos. Anyways, Emily, let's get back to what we're talking about. Nadam and Quillen. We talked a lot about it already. Just want to say this before we move on to the next fight. Nadam earned a lot of fans. Period. If you don't like Nadam, then you got a problem. One thing I heard, though, that Richard – I guess there was supposedly a rematch clause or whatever. Schaefer's trying to say no, that the organization doesn't honor that or something like that. I don't know the whole story yet. But I don't know if Quillen necessarily – and Quillen and Nadam necessarily should have a rematch right away, but I definitely like to see Nadam back in there. How about you?
Absolutely. I didn't actually know much about him before that fight, and I definitely want to see him again. I want to see him against other middleweights. I wouldn't even mind seeing that rematch. I want to see what Quillen learned from that, with the defense and everything.
And shout out to Quillen, who got emotional and everything, and rightfully so. He earned the right to be emotional. He fought a hard fight, a battle, a war, got through it, won, got his first title, you know, in his hometown where his birthplace. He's a funny guy. My favorite part was something about the knockdown or whatever, and he's like, that's Cuban power. I had no idea. That came out of left field, but it was funny as hell. Shout out to him. He did a great job, and he earned the spot to be a champion, and definitely should not have so many haters like some people do been hating on him. He earned the spot now. Of course you do. You gotta agree with me. I'm just kidding. So let's move on to the next fight. BK Zone, the Twitter King, the Magic Man, Pauly Malignaggi versus Juan Pablo Cano in what was probably the second best fight of the night. I really liked that fight. A lot of people always knock on Pauly, and I don't care what anyone says. He's fun to watch. He has so much heart for a small guy. I mean, the fact that he fought through broken jaws, unlike certain people, Victor Ortiz, and this guy's for a small 140 to 147 pound Italian, he has heart. And shout out to Pauly, but he put on a great strong performance as far as entertaining the crowd, and along with his counterpart in the ring, Juan Pablo Cano. Pablo Cesar. I don't know where I'm getting Juan Pablo. I'm making up names right now. It's a long weekend. Anyways, unfortunately for Cano, though, he failed to make weight, which I have no idea how he did that. He's 135 pounder to 140, and he's coming up in weight, and he couldn't make weight. He's a couple pounds over, a pound over. Unbelievable. But first of all,
go ahead.
What was that?
I was just going to say, this trend of fighters not making weight, it's getting, I feel
no, you know.
What's that?
I mean, you know, how do you not make weight when you're coming up in weight? You know what I mean?
Well, and it's not just, you know, Orlando Cruz and his opponent didn't make weight this weekend also. And it seems to me that it's just becoming an acceptable practice. Every weekend there's somebody not making weight. And we joke about it and talk about it. Now, you know, it seems like people are becoming kind of desensitized to it.
I'm definitely not going to talk too much about the weight between Orlando Cruz. I think there's too many jokes to be said about that, and I'm going to get in trouble. with Cesar Cano, though, you know, you're coming. You fought I think he fought earlier in the year at 135 or so. How did you not make 147? But anyway, put on a great fight. Regardless, first of all, I want to know, Emily, who did you have winning that fight?
I have Pauly Malignaggi. Holly winning it very narrowly. I mean, it could have gone, it could have been a draw. I would have been all right with the draw. I don't feel like that scorecard, the one judge, it was like 118 to 109. I thought that was out of line. I mean, he's a hometown fighter. He's going to get, if it's close, you know, and it's going to go one way or another, it's going to go to him, but you know, to Malignaggi. But I would have been all right with the draw.
You know what? You brought it up, and I'm going to vent about it. 118, 109 is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
and I like that. I'm glad to hear what Paulie said about whoever judged that needs to go to Lance Crafters, because really, that person needs more than that. That guy, look, my boy Stevie Wonder could have judged that fight better. That was horrible. 118 and 109 is absolutely just atrocious. It was horrible. I don't even like that word atrocious, but I'm going to use it because it fits it perfectly. It's horrible. You know, it was a tough fight. It was a very, very close fight. But it, by all means, it wasn't 118-109. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And you know, whatever. I don't want to even get on that too much. But look, Cano had a nasty cut. Can you believe that this fight wasn't even stopped, though, with that kind of cut?
And somebody brought up a good point on Twitter somewhere, I don't remember what it was, but they said, you know, if Paulie had gotten that cut, they would have stopped the fight and gone to the car. And I agree. I agree with that. And that, again, you know, just amazing heart by Cano, and I mean, obviously fought a great fight.
Yeah, and you know what? Something I observed in that fight, there were more people cheering for Cano than there was for Paulie. I guess we'll talk more about that, but we do have our next guest, and excited to have this guest on right here. Sean Porter, who was actually, from what I know, was at the fight last night. He's coming off of a victory, a tough victory against Alfonso Gomez. Sean Porter, welcome to the box.
Uh-oh, bad connection. You guys there?
Yeah, I'm here. He kind of cut out a little bit. He's using Skype. So thanks for coming on the show, Sean. This is Emily Kendalakis and Josh McDaniel for the Boxing Fix.
How you doing, Emily?
Nice to talk to you. I've been here in Phoenix trying to work with Albert to get you some sparring partners out here. And I know that one of the folks that we got you the last time you were here was Saul Benitez, and you got to see him fight last night. Obviously suffered a knockout. We talked about that earlier. What did you think of the fights last night?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me onto the show today, tonight, and it was a treat for me going up to the Barclays, being at one of the first professional events they had there, and also it being my birthday. I had a lot of love out there in New York last night, and the fights were great. You can't beat four championship fights in one night, you know what I mean? So. Some of them were a little slower than others, but for the most part, it was just a great, eventful evening.
Oh, well, happy birthday to you, then.
Thank you.
So yeah. I'm thinking that you might have something coming up towards the end of November against Julio Diaz. Is that a done deal?
Nothing is official on paper just yet.
Are you there? Josh?
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know. We might have lost Sean. Sean, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you got cut off. We totally missed whatever you just said, man.
Yeah, you're saying
sorry. I'm working outside right now to handle this because I don't know why, but I'm cutting in and out. So,
are you there, Sean?
Are you there?
Yeah. Watching
yeah.
It.
I'm sorry. Not too sure what's going on. Yeah, like I said, yeah, we're expecting to hopefully fight in November, definitely before the end of this year. And, you know, we're preparing right now, getting the weight down and, you know, working hard all day, every day. So it's a work in progress, but we're handling it.
What's your connection to Phoenix that brought you here for – I know you came here to prepare a little bit for your previous fight. What is your connection here in Phoenix that brings you here?
We got some good family and friends out there, and, you know, my dad has a thing that wherever we go, we need to be able to work. So, you know, a few times we've come out there just to visit, you know, always take the equipment, find the gyms, and find the best sparring we can. So I think we've done two trips out there, and we've been able to get in the gym, get some very good work out there. So my dad is actually thinking about doing our next official camp out there. So maybe he'll put that together, and we'll be out there soon.
Yeah, I was talking with Albert about that, and just so you also train out of the wild card sometimes. Is that correct?
Yeah, I love the wild card. The wild card is great because you get a lot of different styles, a lot of different techniques, and just, you know, overall it's competition every day. You know, whether you're actually sparring or just, you know, getting in the ring to catch miss after somebody else, you still want to look good. So I think most important is that we're able to push ourselves with whoever we're in the ring with and get in some good weather, some good heat, and you know, make the best of our training sessions. That way we're, you know, 100% for our fights.
Who have you gotten to get, you know, some good sparring with out there at the World Cup?
I've been in the ring with everybody. I mean, you name them, I've been in the ring with them. I mean, you obviously know Manny Pacquiao. I've been in the ring with him. Peter Quillen, who Kid Chocolate, I'm just so happy for him, so proud of him. Congratulations to him. He did a fantastic job on Saturday, in my opinion, was just about the fight of the evening. I've been able to get in the ring with him, you know, and just a number of other fighters from, you know, different countries, Armenia, you know, Puerto Rico, Mexico, you know, all over the United States. So it doesn't matter who you're getting in the ring with out there at the wild card. It's going to be a good sparring session, and, you know, something you can learn from.
It seems to me that the wild card family of fighters is pretty tight, like regardless of promoter, manager, trainer. But, you know, you see a lot of support between the wild card fighter. I mean, I guess it happens at any gym, but just wild card being such a gym with so many people coming in and out of there, it seems like the core group of fighters there really supports each other, and that's a nice environment.
Well, you know what? You can't step into the wild card unless you're, number one, you're ready for that kind of competition. But then also, you have to be a competitor. And I think one thing with boxing is it's already a family sport. So we just kind of, you know, we gravitate towards one another and, you know, we work each other, we push each other, and then when it's time to fight, you know, we just root each other on. And I think it does become a thing where you feel like you're more so family and friends than, you know, actually, you know, someone you're going to face, you know. And I think that, you know, we kind of look forward to, you know, pushing each other in camp and looking forward to, you know, seeing that guy that you helped, you know, and his training, you know, seeing his hand raised. So I think we look forward to that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's the wild card is awesome. The wild card is awesome.
Now, hey, Sean, you know, your last fight against Alfonso Gomez, you know, you suffered that vicious cut, man. How hard was it to fight through it?
It wasn't hard at all. You know, I at that point, I was going into the last round, I believe. And, you know, from that point on, it's just a thing of, you know, pushing yourself and staying focused. And, you know, I have a great team behind me. And, you know, we work hard in the gym, not only from a physical standpoint, but also from a mental standpoint. And, you know, being ready for anything, you know, we work on all that kind of stuff. So fighting through that cut was nothing. It was just a matter of, you know, convincing the doctors and coaches that I could, and the doctors and referees that I could do it. And, you know, after that, it just was, you know, mind over matter.
Now, you know, since you were at Barclays last night, you saw Cano's cut, right? That one was pretty vicious. Did you think that fight was going to be would have been stopped because of how nasty that cut was?
Cano's cut?
Yeah.
What round did that happen in? Was that like the second round?
I think it was the second round.
It was early. Well, you know what? It was early in the fight, and I thought that Paulie, you know, we've seen Paulie. We know he's got speed and quickness, and we know he can throw his hands. I thought that Paulie was going to touch him up and that cut would be a deciding factor in the fight. But, you know, Cano, you know, he showed a lot of heart and grit, and he fought through it. And, you know, I think he may have surprised a lot of people in the crowd that night. I thought the fight was a lot closer than it was scored. You know, but, you know, you got to tip your hat to, you know, Paulie being the veteran in there and doing what he had to do to pull out the victor.
How was, you know, the earlier in the show we were talking about how, you know, they brought boxing back in Brooklyn. This is a big event. It's a big thing. I think it's great for boxing. I'm in the West Coast. I'm in L.A. But, you know, I know how important it is for boxing to get big and to get big again in the East Coast. How was the atmosphere there?
The atmosphere was great. It was a lot like, you know, Vegas, you know, a little slow in the early part of the evening. But, you know, as that co-main and that main came into the ring, you know, everybody showed up. And Brooklyn really showed up. Brooklyn really showed up for that fight show. And it was a good night, man. That was a great, exciting night for boxing. I had a good time in New York, man. The Barclays is a great venue for boxing.
Now, you know, you're from Ohio, correct?
Yes, sir.
Your follow-up to that one,
yeah.
Guys?
You there?
Now, do you keep in Ohio?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, do you keep in touch with a lot of the prospects and the young kids out of Ohio that are coming up?
I try to. You know, that's one thing that I'm big on is giving back. So whether it's, you know, we actually went to the National Powell just a week ago, and we stayed up there the whole week and, you know, got to hang out with the guys, see who's up and coming, see, you know, who's about to make that turn in the pro ranks and, you know, just give some encouragement, give back, and show those guys that, you know, if you work hard and stay diligent, you can be successful in the ring.
Who's some of the prospects do you see coming, making a big impact? Like, you know, I think you got, like, what, Rasheed Warren from out somewhere out there in Ohio? He's a three-time Olympian. Is there anyone else that people should keep their eye out on?
Well, definitely you got to support Terrell Gautier. He's from Cleveland, Ohio. He was on the Olympic team at 155 this year, and I'm very happy and proud of him for what he did this year. He made the Olympic team and he made that run, you know. And I think he might have been one of the older guys on the team, and he really showed, you know, that, you know, boxing is still alive here in Cleveland. And he's signed to turn pro and he'll start fighting really soon. Keep your eye out for Terrell Gautier.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? I've kind of just watched Terrell when he fought for the LA Matadors with Rasheed Warren. And, man, Terrell's a talented, overlooked kid, too, I think. I think a lot of people don't pay attention, and he's definitely someone to keep an eye out. How big is boxing getting out there in Ohio?
You know, it's not as big as it used to be, in my opinion. When I was coming up, you know, boxing was – that was it. You know, we had a champion in every weight division. Now it's, you know, it's starting to make its run, come back. But, you know, I think with guys like me and Terrell Gautier, you know, showing these guys that are coming up in boxing, you know, stay in the gym, keep working hard. You can make the Olympic team. You can turn professional. You can, you know, fulfill your dreams. I think me and Terrell Gautier are, you know, big symbols of that. And, you know, we can show these guys out here in Cleveland what the sport of boxing really is. And it'll grow. It'll get back to where it was.
Sean, are you trained by Freddie Roach still, or who do you work with primarily?
My dad is always semi-primary coach. Dad is just, you know, he's actually allowed Freddie to, you know, lend a hand in our sparring, in our camps, which has been a great help. I've learned a great deal from Freddie, and, you know, basically from a technical aspect, offensively, and, you know, just my dad is, you know, studied Freddie and what he does, and, you know, some of the techniques that he's shown me, we've kind of made our own, and, you know, I think I'm successful because of that. But, you know, my dad he's always been my number one coach, and since I was born, you know what I mean. So he'll always be the number one.
I noticed when I was, you know, doing some research on you before the show that you had a win over Daniel Jacobs in the amateurs. Are you friends with him? What did it feel like last night, you know, to witness him, you know, getting that win after his fight with cancer?
Well, you know what, seeing what he's been through in these last few years, it was great just to see him in the ring. And he got a first-round knockout, couldn't have been any better. And it's funny that you asked me that, because there has always been, you know, just a tad bit of animosity, you know, just because of, you know, the things we've gone through the amateurs. I walked on the floor and Mike Tyson was there. I was speaking to Mike Tyson. I walked away from Mike, and as soon as I turned around, Danny was right there, and he pushed me, and he was smiling. He was like, man, I'm so happy to be back, and, you know, I'm smiling. We hugged up a little bit, you know, so it's just like I said before, man, boxing is one of those sports that, you know, if you're a competitor, you have to appreciate another competitor. You have to respect it, and at the end of the day, you can't help but, you know, be happy for someone who's able to overcome what he's been through and you know, be successful coming through that. So I hope there's much more success and blessings for him in the future.
Well, thank you for coming on. I sure appreciate it. When if you decide to do your camp in Phoenix, you're gonna be, I know one of the sparring partners I was working to set you up with is one of my fighters, Javier Loya, and I think you sparred a little with him before. But I hope that, you know, you can come over to Dad and have dinner. I'll cook you guys some food or something, you know, when you're here in town.
That sounds good. Don't take much to cook me a salad, so maybe I'll get over for that. But thanks again for having me on tonight. Hopefully you see me in November, if not December, definitely before the end of the year. Team Porto has to be back in the ring. We don't just want to be back in the ring. We have to be back in the ring. And you can follow me at Showtime Sean P on Twitter, and also Showtime Sean P on Facebook as well. So thank you guys, and you guys have a good night. All right.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, you too, Sean. Man. Hey, thanks for coming on. You're always welcome on the show, man.
Thank you. I'll be calling in. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
What a great interview. He's what a nice guy. Like, just a humble guy, just class act. I like him a lot.
Showtime was at Showtime last night of the fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that a bad joke?
Yeah, a little bit. Sorry, though. I asked about animal prints on somebody's trunk, so whatever.
Yeah, that was.
Hey, I wanted, before I forget, I want to say thank you to Albert Alvarez from DiamondBoxing.com, AZFrontRow.com, and ESNewsReporting.com for setting up that interview. He's here in Phoenix. It's awesome. He has very good friends with Paulie, too, actually. And you can follow him at Marty Blues on Twitter.
Miracle. There you have it. Give him your shout-outs and everything.
Now
let's get into the main event of the night. I want to, first of all, since you gave some shout-outs, I want to make a quick little thing. Eric Morales, you know, we all know he failed the drug test and everything. The story was broken by good friends of mine and Leave It in the Ring, Scott Hill at Hillstorm Sports, along with Joe Callis and D-Cell Boxing. They worked very hard and broke that story. You know, and they were Scott Hill was on Leave It in the Ring on Thursday to talk about it, and it was really interesting. Great. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, go back to the archives and make sure you listen to last Thursday's show. But anyways, Eric Morales, it's his time to retire. We all know that. Danny Garcia went in there and did what he had to do. And that's pretty much the bottom line. Danny Garcia did what he had to do. If this would have gone to decision, I think a lot of people would have been disappointed, and especially me, because I know Garcia. I used to not think much of Garcia's skills until his last few fights, and he's proven to me that he's the real deal. And being the real deal, you got to take out opponents that need to be taken out. And Eric Morales was, and people are going to hate me for saying this, Eric Morales was like Old Yeller. He was past his prime, he had to be taken out back, and Garcia did just that. And, man, Garcia, that was a vicious knockout. That's all I got to say, really. I mean, what do you think about that fight? And what do you think about this whole thing with the testing and everything and regarding Morales and the fight?
Saving that for my rant, but okay. Somebody put it really well on Twitter, something to the effect of, or it may have been an article I read, that the people who are supposed to be deciding if a fight is safe to move forward is the New York State Athletic Commission. And the person who ultimately had to decide was the fighter that tested clean. do I take this risk? I mean, it wasn't a performance-enhancing drug. It was, you know, a banned substance. There is a difference. I mean, I don't, if it were a steroid or something, he may have chosen not to take the fight. There may have been, you know, extra money involved. I don't know. I just think that if somebody, the whole point of drug testing is if somebody tests positive, you know, they don't get to fight. They don't get to get paid. They don't get to be on TV. And I don't, you know, if they had canceled the fight, I think his legacy would have been appropriately blemished. Because the fight went on, he, you know, fought, he got knocked out, and everybody's like, oh, you know, that's okay, you know, just retire, we love this guy, so great. And that's wrong. He used a bad substance, he gained an advantage by not, you know, having to lose weight the way that he's supposed to be doing. And, you know, it does have properties, the thing that he took has properties like ephedrine, or similar effects, and that, you know, could be considered a performance enhancer. Of course, he didn't have it in his system, you know, as of Wednesday when they did the other test, but I just think that, you know, it's not okay to have let that fight go on. The card was a strong card
Well, I couldn't agree with you anymore. I agree with you 100%. And like you said, you're going to say that for your rant. I'm going to say something for my rant, too. But, you know, let's concentrate on the positive side real quick. Danny Garcia is a force to be reckoned with at that 140-pound division, I think. I think he's the real deal. Hey, you know what? And it's funny story. After I chose, and I'm not a big supporter of Amir Khan. I'm not a big fan of his. I picked Amir Khan to beat Danny Garcia, and then, you know, we saw what happened. You know, Danny Garcia, I was on another radio show on the Boxing Report with D-Cell, and we had Danny Garcia's mother call in, and I told Garcia's mom that, you know, I was going for Amir Khan, blah, 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 and she opened a can of whoop-ass on me over the phone. It was pretty funny. So that's my claim to fame with his mom. So shout out to Danny Garcia and his family. I'm sorry?
Can I get a link for that?
Yeah, I'll look for it. I'll look for it after the show. It's pretty funny. We had Garcia and his mom on. But anyways, Garcia came in that fight, did his thing. He looked good. He looked strong. And my favorite part was how he conducted himself after the fight as well. Like, he was classy. He wasn't a young, immature prick like some fighters would be. He was very classy. He was even funny. You know, they asked him, what did you say to him at the weigh-in? And he's like, I'm going to beat your That was cool. You know, he was very classy. He gave a shout-out to his family. That's always nice. I like to see fighters like that. And he's hungry still, even though he is already a champion. He's a young kid, always gets better. And I think he's a guy that's going to get bigger and better paydays coming up. I mean, we're going to start rumors. Leonard Allaby was at the fight. Why was he there? Was he scouting someone for Floyd Mayweather? Who knows? You know, we got Victor Ortiz. You know, he was there. That would be a hell of a fight. Lucas Matisse and Danny Garcia, you know, that would be interesting. So much for Danny Garcia ahead of him. He's a hell of a fighter and a young kid. And also, him and his dad deserve a reality television show. I will watch it every day. Screw basketball-wise. Screw Real Housewives of Orange County, Atlantic City, and Atlanta, whatever it is. I want the Angel Garcia show.
Well, and don't forget, also, he has his girlfriend sing the national anthem, and she's beautiful, so she has a music career. So I definitely think with all those people involved, you could make a reality show.
Yeah, but I just want to see Angel Garcia talk. I would pay to watch him talk for 30 to an hour on television. That guy's entertaining. Did you expect Morales to get knocked out, though?
No, I didn't. I actually thought he'd go the distance, but if he's cutting weight real late, having to use a supplement, that kind of thing, that would explain, or I'm sorry, eating tainted meat, that would explain why, you know, if he was struggling a little bit, I definitely expect him to go longer than four rounds. You know what, Danny Garcia's got, I was going to say, you were talking about him, he's got kind of the perfect setup where he has the ability to kind of be a, you know, this humble, nice guy that everybody likes. And his dad takes care of the trash talking for him. So it's kind of funny because he gets kind of the best, he gets the publicity, the Adrian Broner publicity of being flashy and talking when he's not actually doing any of the talking, so.
Yeah, he definitely has everything for him, going for him. I mean, his dad literally has the gift of gab. His dad could talk, you know, his dad can convince, you know, his dad sounded like an evangelist on television at certain points, you know, like you want to listen to him. He's entertaining, you know, so he has everything. He doesn't have to always run his mouth. He does at times, and that's cool. But for the most part, it's his pops running his mouth, and he's backing his pops up. And I think that makes make him a little bit more of a better fighter, because not only is he backing up what he has to do, but he's fighting for his dad. It's like his dad's going out there saying, oh, he's going to KO this guy, da-da-da-da-da. Like, you know, he has a real strong relationship with his dad. He doesn't want to make his dad look like a fool, you know? And he goes in there and he takes care of business.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. I like him. You know, he's very likable. And you know, I'm sorry to see Morales. You know, you had Tarver, Morales, these fighters that really shouldn't be fighting anymore. If you got to use something to help you be able to fight, still, you should probably not be fighting. I'm happy that he is retiring, right? Like, that's not in question.
Well, he will be doing his retirement fight in Tijuana. That was what he had said. He wants to do a farewell fight. He said, I want to give a bye-bye fight in Tijuana, Mexico. His exact words were bye-bye, which was classic.
Right.
But he'll probably fight nobody or someone in Mexico, similar to what Chavez Sr. did. But Chavez Sr. went on a whole road trip. He did a farewell in California, a farewell in Vegas, I think a farewell in Atlantic City, farewell in Mexico. But in Morales' case, he's just going to do a farewell in TJ, from what it sounds like. I'm going to play devil's advocate, or I'm going to play – I'm going to sound sick and twisted and sadistic for saying this, but how about in his farewell fight, you bring out Marco Antonio Barrera out of retirement, and you have them go at it again in TJ?
And you can put Marquez Pacquiao 5 on the undercard.
There we go. Right there, Golden Boy, you know, Golden Boy and Top Rank come together to form the ultimate TJ card. We got Pacquiao Marquez 5, and on the co-main event, Marco Antonio Barrera versus Morales in another legendary series of fights. I'm telling you. But that would be funny if they were to fight again. They would both come out in walkers or something somewhere in TJ, and they would kill each other like always. But enough with that. All in all, Brooklyn put on a hell of a night of fights. Although I thought it was going to be a bad night of fights, with all the controversy and BS regarding, and it looked like there's a bunch of mismatches on there. It turned out to be a really good card, in my opinion. Great for Brooklyn. I always wanted to say this because I am a fan of Jay-Z, and you know, I like Brooklyn, but so I'm going to get a chance to say it right now. Brooklyn, stand up. I always wanted to say that. So congratulations to Brooklyn and all the fighters on the card and everyone who attended.
Yeah, I agree.
But,
that the drug thing, you know, kind of took away from some of the – but it was nice. It was nice for East Coast boxing fans to have a big card out there, frankly. I talked to Michael Woods, the reporter. He writes for ESPN, the magazine, and The Ring. And, you know, I'm like, are you going to the fights this weekend in Vegas? Because it's a big trip, you know. Like, I could, but I got to leave my family and, you know, it's nice for them to get some fights over there on the East Coast.
It definitely is. And I'm actually going to try – I would love to try to go to a fight in the East Coast one of these days. I got so many people out there. You know, I won't have to get a hotel. I'm just going to bum a couch out there, you know. So I definitely love to make it out there and, you know, see some of the East Coast boxing addicts and boxing heads out there, you know. But real quick, we're going to go over a few more fights. Before we do our random raids, we're kind of running out of time, but let's just do this real quick. Any boxing addicts out there that want to talk boxing, call in 347-215-7598. I'm going to go over it one more time, 347-215-7598. And don't forget to catch Noche de Box Sales on Monday. That's the Spanish version of, like, Leave It in the Ring. All you Spanish speakers, make sure you check that out. And then also Thursday night we have Leave It in the Ring Radio, brought to you by Dave Duenas and the Dark Cloud, Gabriel Montoya, produced by our awesome producer who does this show and all the other shows Leave It in the Ring provides, David Chen. So make sure you check that out. There are 3 hours of Boxing Talk, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, and check out Undisputed Fight Magazine. Go get it at UndisputedFightMag.com. Make sure you check that out. If you're a boxing addict and you don't have it, I don't think you really like boxing. I'm just saying you probably like UFC better. But that's my opinion about you if you don't have it. So anyways, let's get over and cross the pond. Let's run down the whole pond thing. I'm going to go overseas to wherever you want to call it. Cal Brook. We talked about it a little bit. Cal Brook knocked out. I feel like I'm saying his name wrong, but I'm going to try it anyways. Hector Saldivia. Is it Saldivia? Saldivia?
Saldivia.
Saldivia. There we go. Thank you, Everly. I just wanted to make sure. I knew you knew how to say it. But Cal Brook knocked out Hector. You know, he just dominated the fight, and he knocked him out with a jab, essentially. And Saldivia didn't look like he had nothing to beat. He shouldn't have been in that fight with Cal Brook. But Cal Brook coming off another tough fight with Carson Jones, and then in this fight. It's time for Cal Brook to step up in competition, I think. I like him a lot. I think he has talent, but we don't have much to judge it on. I know you're a little bit new with Cal Brook and stuff, but do you think that is it time now he needs to step up, or he needs to step up or shut up type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he did look like he kind of outclassed Hector last night. Hector, full disclosure for the listeners, he's one of my fighters. It was a hard loss, you know, to see, because he did prepare very well for the fight. He was getting good sparring, a lot of hard. I'm not sure, you know, I was surprised at how quickly it ended and the way it ended, but, you know, I'm still proud of him, still behind him, you know, part of my team, part of his. But honestly, I think Cal Brook has got some talent. He looked really good, especially when compared to his fight with Carson Jones. I would like to see him step it up a little. I think in the future, an exciting fight would be Cal Brook versus Berto, because I think their styles would make just a really exciting fight.
Cal Brook versus who? You said Berto?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that would be cool, but that's not going to happen because Berto has the fight coming up.
No,
but,
not any. Yeah, obviously, but...
But that would be, if we were playing matchmakers, that would be definitely an interesting fight. Victor Ortiz, too.
But I don't know if we're going to see him in the UK. That's the only thing. You know, it takes a lot for the fighters to actually leave the UK and do fights out of there. So, I mean, what's there in the UK? Not a ton of fighters. So we'll see, you know, what ends up happening. If somebody's going to have to go there to fight him, you're probably going to be looking at a mid-level, you know, welterweight that, from the States that's going to go over there and fight him. You know, that's had some bigger name fights, I think.
Right.
Like, I don't know, I'd have to think, but.
Him and Ricky Hatton?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously an option. I don't really need to see Ricky Hatton fight anymore, but I think Cal Brook might actually, I don't know. I think Cal Brook might actually beat Ricky Hatton. I don't think he's kind of been the same since Pacquiao rang his bell a few years ago. And, you know, I don't know. You never know what retirement was. Maybe like a Cintron. Is he still fighting? A 147, that might be the type of fighter, somebody that's fought some decent names, you know, is a decent fighter, that would probably be the next step for Cal Brook.
You know, it would be funny to see, and this is just pure money, you know, for the fighter I'm going to mention. Now, I know people have always mentioned this before, so I'm going to just repeat some things I've heard before. Doubt it'll happen, but it'd be huge for money out there. And he's always talked about going over to cross the pond to fight Floyd Mayweather against Cal Brook. Hey, they'll make a hell of a Floyd will make a lot of money out there. I mean, we see the fans out there in the UK love Floyd, and they support all their fighters. They sell out events like crazy. I think they would laugh in the face of anybody. Laugh at the face of any Americans when we say we got 5,000 people to come to a fight. They laugh at us like, that's it? Like,
yeah.
That's a Thursday night club fight for us, you know? Like, really? You
I
know, so
that
would be funny to see.
I think that's the kind of fight that strengthens boxing, you know, getting fighters together, you know, from different continents, And it makes the sport stronger, you know. We're exposing, I mean, obviously the UK audience has been exposed to Mayweather, but, you know, exposing the American audience to UK fighters, that'd be good for the, you know, for them, obviously. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't see it actually happening. It's a fantasy matchup, but, you know, that wouldn't be bad. You know, Pauly might be a good opponent. You know, I don't know if I see Pauly as, like, you know, top of the elite fighter still. And I wouldn't, you know,
no,
that may not be.
But if Cal Brook could beat Pauly, though, he Pauly might not be the elite of the elite, but
yeah,
he's a tough
still
guy.
Good.
Yeah. So if Cal could beat Pauly, I would be very impressed with that. You know, I think Pauly gets a bad knock. I mean, I like Pauly. I go out there. I'm a fan of Pauly. I've always been. You know, he gets screwed a lot. But that's what made me become a fan of him, because of all the times he's been screwed. It's like I feel bad for the guy. But he's a nice guy. He interacts with his fans. And he's talented. I don't care. He might not be the strongest puncher. He might not knock you out. But he's technical. He's quick. He's fast. And he's a showman.
Hey,
so,
yeah. And
you know,
he's a elusive fighter. He's hard to hit. You know, he's very, you know, he's elusive. Like I said, you know, I think that would be something. That would be a great test for Cal Brook. I think that would be something that it would be a good fight for both of them. But he's already proven he doesn't mind going overseas to fight. And obviously, that's
right.
Sure that they'd want him. I mean, maybe they bring Cal Brook here. I don't know. Maybe to Brooklyn. But that would be a great
I know
test.
What Pauly wants. I know who Pauly wants to fight. He wants Devin Alexander, I think.
Yeah.
They have their little beat. But, you know, because we're pressing time real quick, I want to talk about one other fight before we get into our prospect watch. Real quick, Kenny Anderson versus Robin Reed. What was your take on that fight?
First of all, I think Anderson's kind of a jerk. I picked him to win by knockout. I thought that his sportsmanship, that's really important to me. You know, as you know, like I always talk about what I think about the fighter's personalities. And, you know, at some point after, I want to say, I have to look at my notes, after like the third round or something, Reed put out his gloves, the touch gloves, and Anderson just, you know, waved it off, basically. And it was just kind of, I don't know.
I'm the opposite of that. I'm completely off. I don't want to see my fighters touching gloves before every round. You saw that.
It wasn't every round, but I just felt like it was kind of a snub and it wasn't necessary. It's the same thing. I don't like it when fighters, you know, mug in the ring. I don't like that kind of behavior. It's just not my favorite. It happens. One of my fighters has done it, two of them, and I, you know, it's just what it is.
I just don't like the total touching gloves before rounds. You touch it before the fight, and then, you know, even before the fight, I really don't like them touching gloves. Tell you the truth, I'd rather see them just go at it. You touch gloves and hug each other after the fight. You know, we saw with Mosley and Pacquiao, if I remember, if that was the fight that really pissed me off. They touch gloves every round. You go in there wanting to kill your opponent, essentially. You're not in the ring to be friends, all right? When you're touching gloves, no. Maybe you touch gloves if you do a low blow or something, like, oh, my bad, you know, I'm sorry. I can understand that, because that's a private area. You know what I mean? Like, you got to respect that.
Reed was warned four times for low blows in that fight. So maybe that's why it was, because he only did it the one time. I don't know. I don't mind it. I'm not saying they have to, like, kiss him, you know, Victor Ortiz style. But, you know, I don't mind the touch. I think it's a good sport.
We all know Victor Ortiz took you to a whole other level of apologizing by kissing his kissing Floyd Mayweather on the cheek. But that's neither here nor there.
Reed, technically, I like watching him fight. I don't know if I want to see him fight anymore, but I would like to go back and look at some of his old fights, because I know that he got beat, and it was a big fight. I don't remember who was it that beat him, but he was a very strong fighter technically, and I enjoyed watching him. He was a fun fighter to watch, even at this level. You know, obviously he struggled against Anderson. Anderson was a younger, stronger fighter, but Anderson was a little sloppier, like I said earlier. And I would like to see more of Reed, like just some old, you know, footage, because he was cool to watch, and he seemed, you know, like a good guy.
Right. No, definitely. You should go back and watch some of his fights. He was and is an entertaining fighter. But Emily, we got 10 minutes. We're running short on time. And I want to really get to, before we get to the random raise, I really want to do this new little segment that I thought of. And we're going to call this the Prospect Watch. And everyone knows on the boxing fix, we try to concentrate on a lot of the undercards that people may miss or not heard of or whatnot, you know. And fighters that are up and coming, I love prospects. That's one of my favorite things. I love going to small events and seeing up and young and up and coming future of boxing. I'm going to start off first real quick. I got you, and I know you got you you want to talk about, but I'm going to make mine quick because I want you to get in depth about yours. First of all, on the undercard of what we were just talking about with of Cal Brook's fight, you put me on this fight. You told me to watch it. Khalid Yafai, hell of a fighter. Everyone, keep, make sure you watch him. YouTube him, whatever it is. Go on sweetboxingvideos.com.
Are you still there? Did we lose you?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm still here.
Okay,
still
cut
here.
Out.
Khalid Yafai is talented. He's quick. He's quick. He's fast. You know, he great body shot. This guy is, if you're a boxing purist or just love seeing a guy with that those attack the body with just like just power, overwhelming power, make sure you go and check this kid out. He's a top prospect. I think he's 4-0 now. He's very talented. He is someone that you want to pay attention to. And also, we had him on the show last week. He used to fight for the Matadors. He came from Medford, Oregon, a small town. I just wrote an article on him. You can go check it out on leaveitintheringradio.com. But Javier Torres used to be fighting for the Matadors, made his pro debut earlier this year, just signed to Thompson Boxing, fought under the Thompson as a Thompson Boxing promotion fighter finally on Friday night, defeated his opponent by first-round knockout. Javier Torres, another fighter you must watch. Keep your eye on him. He's a real good prospect. And in the heavyweight division, Mexican-American in the heavyweight division. And I'd love to see more of him. Very talented young kid who's determined to win a title. So go ahead and check my article on leaveintheringradio.com about him. And make sure you keep your eye on him as well. Very talented. And Emily, how about you? You got two prospects that fought over the weekend. Why don't you tell everyone who we watched? Because one of them, I like both of them, but one of them, I'm really high up on. I like this one kid. Why don't you go ahead and tell him?
Yeah, I'm sure you're talking about Trevor McCombie. He's 8-0.
Wait. You call him Trevor McCombie. I'm calling him T-Rev. That's T-Rev.
Yeah, that's his nickname, T-Rev. T-Rev McCombie. Trevor is based out of Phoenix. He was born in Chicago, but he trains here in Phoenix. And that's how I met him. One of my friends from high school, her husband is a strength coach, so we all kind of got together. Kiona, who you met, Jeff. And, you know, this kid, I met him when he was, I think, 3-0, three knockouts. And I saw him fight, and he knocked this guy out. It was, like, the last fight after the televised ESPN card in Tucson. So everybody was leaving, and they all missed this amazing fight. And that's the next card he was on is the same thing. And the more I watch him, the more excited I get about him. He fought last week on the October 13th card in California, the Brandon Rios, Mike Alvarado undercard, and he scored a knockout in the first round. And then he fought again a week later in Virginia last night, and he scored another knockout in the fourth round. And so he's something special, you know. He's Cameron Duncan, he's about to sign with Top Rank. He's got the heart. You wouldn't believe the heart on this kid, like for his love for fighting, for his love for boxing and training. He's something different. He's special. He had a great amateur career, won 14-11, went pro at 17. And, you know, he's something to watch. Trevor McCombie, check him out. It's T_RevMcCombie on Twitter or Trevor McCombie. You can find him on Facebook as well. He's awesome. My other prospect, Javon Young,
go ahead.
You're cutting out a little bit. My next prospect, Javon Young, he's out of Miami. He was born and raised in the UK. He's been on the show before. He's supposed to have fought for the Jamaican team in the Olympics. Didn't end up happening, so went pro. And he's now 4-0-1. He got his first draw last night. For some reason, he normally fights at 168. He took a fight at 180. I'm not sure what that's about. Still trying to find out the details there, but hopefully we're going to be getting him signed with one of the bigger name managers. We're working on that. And you know, we're just going from there. It means that he's a good, strong prospect, great power. You know, he just needs a little polishing, but he's got a great trainer, and, you know, I'm expecting big things from both those guys.
Definitely, definitely. And those both of them are guys that you got to keep your eye out on. Trevor is definitely a guy I'm a fan of. He's knocking out people left and right. And for the fact that he just fought two fights in 2 weeks, that's old school grind them out style. Like, why not keep fighting? If you didn't get touched in the last fight, then you might as well continue going. So he's doing his thing. We got 5 minutes left. Let's do some rants and raves real quick before we end the show. So much to talk about, and, you know, but go ahead. Emily, start off.
Because we're short on time, I won't rant about me being mad at you. So I'm going to skip right to Glenn Johnson coming out of retirement. I don't want Glenn Johnson to come out of retirement. Everybody was very happy that he retired, not because he's the best fighter. It's just time, and you don't want him to put himself at further risk. Nice guy, you know, great fighter. Don't really need to see him come out of retirement. How do you feel about that?
I mean,
and he just retired,
it doesn't bother me too much, but I do see where you're coming from. You know, it was a perfect time, but you know, I don't think you should stay around much longer. So I definitely agree with you to a certain point. I'm not too, but I wouldn't be too mad about it. My rant though is Golden Boy, and I know this is why you're going to agree with me. You know, they're having problems with fighters making weight and drugs, and yet the fights are still continuing and no punishment. I don't care if it's contaminated meat or not. I really don't buy into it. I mean, I heard that case before for a soccer team, but in this case, I don't really buy too much into it. And the fact that they continue to let these fighters fight, what's the point of drug testing then? I'm all for drug testing, but only if it's done right. If you test positive, you should not be allowed to fight, plain and simple. I understand it's a money thing. I understand that, you know, that they, if this fight didn't happen, it kind of sucks for the crowd and the people from Philly who came or you know, Garcia. But still, the fact of the matter is, if you test dirty, you shouldn't be able to fight. I mean, it's completely BS. How about Andre Berto? How about Peterson? How about those fights? But, you know, it is what it is. Real quick, Emily, you can take us out, whatever. Finish, say what you guys say on your rant. If you got any more rants and raves, go ahead.
Rant number one, Austin Trout as a commentator, thumbs up. I like that. He did a good job.
What?
Austin Trout commentating on Showtime. That's
you didn't
my rant.
Like it?
No, I did. That's, I meant rave. I keep mixing up. Rave. I'm sorry. That's
yeah,
a rave.
Yeah, rave. All right, good.
My
yeah.
bad. Sorry about that. I said rant in the instant message to you. I didn't mean that. I meant rave. That's too rave. Sorry. It's the end of the show. I'm getting tired. All right. Austin Trout is a commentator. That's a rave. My second rave was Jorge Arce versus Donaire in Mexico. I think that's a ballsy fight for Nonito to take in Mexico. I think he'll still probably win, you know, but I think that's going to be a really good fight for boxing fans.
Yeah, shout out to Jorge Arce, one of my favorite fighters to watch. Viva Arce, I hope he puts, and he's not going to be afraid. He's going to go in there. He's going in there to fight, plain and simple. We're going to have to end the show. My raves don't matter. It's all about Emily's raves. She does it for her. You know, real quick, I want to thank everyone for who came on the show, you know, and Sweet Boxing, our producer David Chen. Everybody, make sure you go and leave it in the ring radio. We have some great articles on there, some of mine, some of Emily, some of everyone's. Great stuff. On behalf of Emily, we want to thank you very much for checking out the show. You can follow her at Emily Boxing, Miss PR Superstar, Emily Pondolak. Thanks for joining me once and like always, and we'll be back next week, right? Are you going to be ready?
Yep, I'll be there.
All right, so on behalf of you and myself, all you boxing addicts, thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Boxing Fix. For all you boxing addicts, and come and get your fix. Have a great night.